Welcome to the friend zone.
Every time
zone.
I'm in the zone.
My name is Dustin.
I'm Francesco, also known as Hey Friend Hey.
My name is Asante.
This is the friend zone. Let's start the show.
I'm in the zone.
The devil almost got me, y'all. I'm in a position where I need to go buy a quick white t-shirt, right? So I'm walking down the street and I'm like, well, shit, let me just run in H&M real quick, get this white t-shirt. Not thinking, so I'm walking, gearing to make a right into H&M. As soon as my feet was getting ready to pivot towards the right, it was like God grabbed my ankle with one hand and I heard his voice in my ear whisper, monkey. And I came to my senses and shit, turned my ass right around, kept going down the street. I'm going somewhere else. That's right. Now, that's right. You know, I feel like, you know, you got to walk in your truth. You know what I'm saying? I feel like, you know, you can't hang me with my own rope. So I wanted to be, you know, honest and truthfully honest, and let everybody know that I almost, you know, the devil was really trying to get me the other day, you know, and I wanted to be forthcoming about my experience because, you know,
experience.
You know, we all fall down, but we get back up, okay?
We get up, that's
and,
right.
And, you know, before I've succumbed, you know, to that evil spirit that was on me from H&M for the need, a simple need, you know? This lesson was just, it was so multi-layered, I just wanted to share. So, because it was bigger than my need, my own personal need, I had to recognize the greater gain and, you know, be a vessel in that moment of service, in servitude. And so I turned my ass around and I went somewhere else and got my white t-shirt. And I did not go support H&M and they put the monkey t-shirt on black people's ass.
Oh my God,
and so with that being said.
What's the hashtag?
Turn around. The hashtag is turn around, okay?
Turn around.
Every now and then, okay? You hear monkey in your ear. So I had to turn around, and that's what I want everybody to do. You know, when that spirit is on you, hey, turn around and change
around,
for the better.
Monkey.
So with that being said, that's right.
He said monkey.
He did.
Monkey.
He did. I stopped myself dead in my tracks. Looked down and saw the paw prints. No. So anyway, with that being said, and more importantly understood, welcome to the Friend Zone, your weekly look into all things mental health, mental wellness, and mental hygiene, because who in the hell wants a musty brain?
Not me.
Crickets and tumbleweed.
Tumbleweed.
Hey, friend.
Dustin.
If you're in Harlem, it's tumbleweed.
Not tumbleweed.
It's tumbleweed. You know you've seen it. That's why you
I've seen countless bundles on the ground in Harlem.
I've seen it in my lobby.
I mean, little pieces of braids. I always wonder the history behind the little braid strand. I'm like, you are a whole braid taken out.
I wonder the history behind the departure. Like, was it willful?
Right.
Was it forceful? Was it with force?
Okay.
Blunt force trauma? What was it?
Did it just couldn't take it no more on its own? Like,
Or was it removed forcibly?
And then, even then, I want to know who won.
Might have been a disagreement.
How did we get here?
Exactly.
Did y'all park the bus?
No. How are your weekends?
Weekends was real good. You know, work this weekend. It's very important to me to keep doing that. So,
yes, you've been working a lot.
I have, you
okay,
know.
Getting to them bags. Okay, you got on the money green right
slave.
Now.
And it don't mean a thing,
okay? Whoa.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Kim Zolciak. We'll get to her ass a little bit later.
Oh, Lord.
Or we actually won't.
And thank the Lord Jesus, we will not. With that said, my weekend was wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, segue, take it away. Shout out to everybody. I just dropped tickets for If I Were a Rapper at ifiwerearapper.com. There's still some tickets left if you wanted to come to the show. I've been working really hard trying to put it together. It's going to be a musical comedy game show. It's going to be definitely something for the fearless, not for the faint at heart. Like I said, there are tickets left, but
it's almost sold out, y'all.
It's literally just talked about it, and it is almost sold out. And then it's
fame.
I can't.
Fame.
Even, no, not fame. Community. You know, I just just a call to action for all the people out there that want to do something fun on a Saturday night. And you know, March is my month, so why not have fun with the people? Okay,
it's gonna be so cute, y'all.
It's gonna be amazing. It's gonna be a fun time. And you know, while not working on that, I was also thinking about how the Friend Zone is gonna be in Atlanta at the end of the month too.
Yay.
March 31st.
Twice.
I think that show was going to be sold out almost. So
yeah, from what Alex said, it's already there.
So if you do want to come see us in Atlanta, come see us in Atlanta for the Friend Zone. And there are a couple of other dates as well.
Something's like, and those
look,
are...
Look, because you know I'm in a frenzy. I'm back on the road with the you know, I'm just starting my show up and I'm really nervous. So just, it's been
I
a work
see
weekend.
You having three tours at once. You got to be prepared for this.
I'm ready.
You'll be gone
and
every
then,
weekend.
And then the nerve of me, right, friend, to be trying to pursue music endeavors and write a series, because I had a really good idea for a series, because you know how crazy my life be, right?
Of course.
So I've been in writing mode for that, too. It's insane. But not to toot my horn. We'll get away from all that. Friend, how was your weekend?
Oh, my God. My weekend was amazing.
Uh-huh. Because you was on the West Coast.
Yes,
with them, huh?
I was in L.A., and all I can think of is, how can I get Asante and Dustin to move to L.A. so that we can have the show on the West Coast? Because I need to be there. I genuinely love it.
Well, first
I just
of all,
love it.
You looked great while you were out there.
Thank
you definitely
you.
Did.
I did amazing, you guys. It was a very hectic week. I had to finish out Target. Jumped into Create and Cultivate, which is a conference for women. Shout out to all of you who came out to see me. That was so cool, so amazing. It was awesome to see you guys in LA. I did great.
You did, because I saw you on several people's Instagram
stories. Yes,
like,
that's how you know,
this is
right?
What's up. Yeah.
I did amazing. Someone from NPR came up to me afterwards and was like, "Who represents you?" She was like, "I need to know more about you." And I was like, "Yes,
yes,
I'm here."
Crushed it.
Right, but that was beautiful. It was just like I met a lot of really amazing people. I was proud of myself, you know, because I got up there. I wasn't nervous at all, which I really can't give props to us being on tour and also my wellness tour. We're always speaking in front of people, and it's just really prepped me for moments like that. So
fresh.
That, yeah, you know, where the words just came out with clarity, seasoned, you know?
Yes.
Everything. I felt good. I felt like I looked good. I had the express activation.
And it looked so cute.
Thank
the double chambray shirt and jacket.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That was cool, but, you know, nerve-wracking because it's scary working with brands sometimes when you don't have a lot of time to figure out an outfit because of my shape and my weight. I was like, I don't know if it's going to fit me well, but it was super cute. The dress was cute, the double denim, the thigh-high boots. I think I did great. Shout out to Express for that activation. So it was Target, Create and Cultivate, Express, and then I did a campaign for R. Acacia as well. Shout out to Shameless Maya, my boo cakes, who helped me film that with her awesome self. Yeah. And
powerhouse.
Then,
AKA the fourth member of the friend zone.
So that was awesome. And I got to spend a lot of time with India Sean.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to India. Drop
sister.
The music. Okay.
Yes.
Did she talk to you about some music?
You know I was all up in it. I was like, so, is there a date? Do you need background vocals?
Now, you know, you lucky we not in Black Mirror and I can't just download the listens from your eyes and no shit like that, my friend.
But, you know, it'll come out soon. I'm going to keep pressing her. And then I got to show with Jesse Boykins.
Yes. Shout out to Jesse Boykins.
Shout out to Jesse.
Earth
we went
Girls
to, like,
video
hella. You know he's my artsy-fartsy friend, so he's the one I went to all the, like, art exhibits. And he took me to that side of town.
He a Pisces, and his birthday coming up soon.
Yes. No, it passed already.
Oh, it passed. Happy belated birthday,
right?
Jesse.
Happy birthday.
It's Pisces season.
All
I got to plan out. You know,
I love
coming.
Y'all. I have so many awesome Pisces friends.
What's y'all thing? The fish?
Mm-hmm.
Yo, it's the catfish. Black History Month almost. You know,
oh, look, by the time you listen, Black History Month might be over, but it's Black History Month every month, goddamn,
so right.
Celebrate.
So
shit.
Catfish.
You might be, it's March 2nd. You're like, it is not Black History Month. Yes,
yes
it is.
Yes, it is. NeNe leaks their ass. Yes, it is. Go ahead.
Oh, no, but it was great. I had just a very productive, and y'all know I don't sleep on flights. Remember, I
always
have.
Yes.
You know I was tired when I literally slept that whole flight back.
Yes,
what?
Me and you guys know that I've never been able to, but that's just how tired February has had me, and I felt like I could finally sleep and breathe.
Did your
but
thing.
That's a beautiful thing to be tired because you just had an amazing month. So.
Yes, you earned it.
It's a great week. So I got to just, you know, figure out how to get you out of the West Coast so we can bring this show on the road. That's the plan.
I mean, I love the West Coast now.
Me too. If I get a job out there, I'll come.
I was
really?
About to say,
like
don't
a
let
TV
it be
show
some
or something
cool
where I have to be in
move?
LA?
Yeah.
Don't play with me.
If I got a gig like that, I would definitely move to LA. Shit, is you crazy?
Right?
He said, is you crazy? Well, those of you listening who have a gig for Dustin, what about you, Asante? What'll bring you to LA?
You know, I'm real easy going. I can start out. Everybody out there that's doing the weed parties and events, I would like to be a host for those things.
I want
to
be an attendee.
And you will be in attendance. I will make sure my squad is always there. Maybe I could be like a weed party promoter or something.
Yes, you can.
Like, there has to be a market believe in for you. That. There has to be a market for that, because obviously everybody out there knows that you can get high in LA, and it's like they don't want to do the whole thing of like, what's the best strand? I'm like, I got you. And that way weed companies have to come
the
to me.
Maker,
right. Weed. They have to come to me and be like, I got a good strand. I'll be like, I'll be the judge of that, and I'll test it out at parties and stuff like that.
Okay, those of you listening, this is the plan. Let's get it cracking.
Stick to the plan.
Smoke bay.
And when you exhale, smoke bay.
Yeah, when you exhale your smoke, it looks like a smoky coogee sweater. Oh my God.
Smoke bay is actually a really cute idea.
Thank you.
And
that's a party.
I would love to have a matching Pele Pele jacket, but in green.
Here you go.
Yes.
Are you already getting dressed?
I just seen a Pele Pele jacket the other day, and I was, first of all, never mind. Let's just.
This is probably the wrong conversation to attach this next statement to, but I'm going to do it. I want an 8-ball jacket.
Oh, no.
I so do, though. I want one of the old school 8-ball leather jackets.
Look, even my mic fell over.
But just literally the 8-ball jacket. That's it. It's no context, you know, additionally.
Yeah. Are y'all ready to jump into
Please,
this week's show?
And thank you.
Yeah.
Let's jump in. So we have some very, very, very special guests with us this week.
I mean, very special guests.
Right? We have Claude Kelly and Chuck Harmony of Louis York.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my damn.
I can't even believe I'm in the same room with these two people.
Legends.
Oh, my damn.
Legends.
I'm so happy to be here, man. This is awesome.
We love you. These are my best friends. So this is cool on so many levels. I'm very excited to pick your brain a little bit for the world to get to know a little more about you guys. So I thought it would be a good idea to bring the fellas on.
The fellas. Someone says the fellas. That's some Oprah shit.
The Shin fellas.
The Shin fellas.
Listen, we got to start that shit.
That's our quartet.
Okay.
That's all the male fans out there, the Shin fellas.
There you go.
Okay.
The male Shin fellas. I like it.
No, but you know, we speak a lot on this show about dreams and alignment, manifesting them. How do you do that? Discipline, mental hygiene, as Dustin put it. But it's very rare to meet people in our worlds, in our circles, in our families, friends, just peers that are fully realized. And when I say fully realized, I don't mean that you guys are perfect and have it all together and are done. I mean fully realized in the sense that you had a dream and you accomplished it.
Yes.
And you accomplished it relatively early, because you guys are not even, I mean, I think when you first got your big break, Claude, we had just finished college.
A couple years after college.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We just finished. Yeah. How many people can be in their, mid to late 20s?
Yeah, that shit was bugged out.
It's bugged out. So I thought this is a cool conversation to have. Hell, because what happens when you...
I want to hear about all the dope shit.
What happens when you reach your dream? That's something that not many of us can say. Sadly enough, not many of us will say.
Right.
And most importantly, you're there. So we want to hear what it's like on the other side of town.
I know my chest is tight just thinking about it.
Okay. Hey, brother, I see your grass a little green over there. Oh, it's just a wonder. What it's like.
Stay off my lawn, boy.
But let's start here. Let's start, as always, at the very beginning.
Okay.
Talk to me about your childhood. No, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding, though, actually. No, let's start from the beginning, the life that you guys were born into. Because one of the questions that always comes to me when I see people who make it and people who don't is, why is that? Right. Especially if you have similar backgrounds. You even see it with siblings, people in the same circles and families, that one person or one side of the family ends up pushing through and persevering, and then there's the other side that just doesn't make it happen. So I'm wondering, what was your family life like growing up? Was it something you witnessed? Was it just in your nature? Was it how you were nurtured? Where did this discipline come from? Because I remember Claude, even in high school, because we go way back. We've been friends since we were 14. While the rest of us were being plumb fools.
Our young Carlton Banks was
wait, on this shit.
You know, we were in the cafeteria making Pharrell beats on the cafeteria table while this one was in the choir room, you know, composing and shit. And
arranging vocals
and putting together a cappella groups. You remember a cappella groups? Like, a cappella in our school was a big deal. The white kids took that shit hella seriously. And Claude started his own, and it was for the black kids, which was awesome. Because we were singing all kinds of dope shit. That he was, you know what I mean? Like, our school was a very white private school.
Went to a very private white school.
You know, and he had us singing, like, Shy and... You imagine. So, you know, you were very disciplined very early on. So talk to us where that came from.
My mother, I mean, my family's Jamaican, you know this, but my family's Jamaican. And I'm the only person that really does music in my family, but my mother was not having it. She was like, you better be good at everything. I mean, she didn't force me to do things I wasn't good at, but I had to do something.
Right.
And so I learned really early on the value of hard work. For me, it's not really about talent, because I really believe everybody's talented. I feel like people have to figure out how to put it to work.
Right.
So for me, I learned about. I started working when I was. I got summer jobs when I was 14, all the way till.
I remember.
I got summer jobs now.
Sounds like life ain't been like Christmas.
Still working. But my mom was always like, "You had to like." I just learned early on, like you had to like. You had to learn how to fend for yourself. Like to me, the same way you see celebrities and they have a lot of money and they make their kids, they don't leave nothing in the will for them. They make them. Like we were just talking about, me and Chuck was talking about that, but he was saying that's what he would do, and I would do the same thing. My mom wasn't rich at all. My mother wasn't rich at all. She was a single family. She'd work for everything, but. She also didn't make. She was like, "You have to work for yours too. Like, you're not gonna sit here." Like, I knew that I had to figure something out for myself. So I think
Claude was 5, and his mom's like, "You ain't gonna be no mooch.
You want you a ring pop now?
That's 73 cents. Your portion.
Nickels don't make themselves.
73 cents.
Ring pops don't make themselves now.
Nickels don't make themselves for voting ring pops now.
I was always about like a piggy bank, and I was always about like. Getting a job, like I wanted to be grown so damn bad. Wanted a job so bad. Like the best time for me was buying school supplies, because I felt like I was buying shit for my office.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would beg for stuff that I didn't need, like rubber glue.
Yeah. Or a labelizer.
I'm on like second grade, and I'm like, I think I need a Xerox machine.
Yes.
Because what I'm about to do this year is going to need to be copied. So I always had that mentality the whole time. So I've always done music. I've always loved music. So music was like my language from before I knew anything else. But to me, the hard work that was instilled in me was what, I was just focused. What Fran is not saying is that when we were in high school, she was the same thing. Like, I was very much like, you couldn't tell me nothing about myself. Like, I wasn't arrogant, but I had my plan.
Yes.
So, like, I was cool with everybody, but it wasn't going to stop me from being the musician I wanted to be. And Fran, you were worse.
Well, no, I think the difference between
you were ice cold.
Okay, we're not talking about me.
I'm happy I'm here. Let me tell y'all some shit.
It's the real.
Hit me up if you want to know the real on.
All right, don't say that now. You know,
right.
People listen.
They will hit you up.
Okay.
No, my thing is, we all worked hard because the school that we went to, shout out to Riverdale, was hard to get into in the first place, and then harder to stay in.
Yeah.
But what was special about you was that you knew so young what you wanted to do. I loved music.
Yeah.
You know, I remember we'd be in the cafeteria singing Destiny's Child. I remember No. Yo, I was always Beyonce.
People used to be fighting.
You better sing, friend.
No, but listen.
But
Claude, like, had this determination that was wild. Like, when you're that young, you just want to have fun. At the end of the day, you come to school, you want to floss with your new Jordans and your Parasuco jeans. Mm. I'm aging myself. But he just had a plan. And who has a plan in ninth grade? Like, who has a plan in ninth grade?
I'm an only child.
Me too.
But, damn. You know, ruined my philosophy. No, but for me, like, I guess I'm the same way now. I don't really believe in can't.
Yeah.
I never, like, even back then, I never felt like I couldn't do it. So I was kind of like, well, I'm gonna do music. And whatever I figure out, I'm just going to kick in the door and I'm going to do it. Like, I never believed that I couldn't do anything.
Right.
I never really, it would actually piss me off when people would tell me I couldn't do stuff to the point where I'm like, oh, word? I'm going to show you. So that was always my.
School.
Yeah. It was a lot of that at school. It was a lot of do well academically, but you can't do nothing else.
And then I'm sure seeing your mom, because your mom, single mom, Jamaican.
Yeah. Jamaicans
are notorious for having 10 jobs.
My mom is she was a nurse, and she's retired now, but she was a nurse and worked crazy
the night shift. Crazy hours.
So I was like, now they probably reform me to child welfare services. But back then I was staying by myself when I was like 8, 9, 10, like just
playing piano.
Just playing piano and dreaming as a kid. So I learned that from her, how to like hustle for your dream or do whatever it takes. Like, the holidays didn't matter to me because it didn't matter to her.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm like,
that's real.
Christmas is meant you get paid double.
No, he didn't.
Like, you get double time. So I've always been kind of a go-getter like that. That's just in my blood, I guess.
But it's definitely a nature thing, too, because there are a lot of kids with single parents that are still plum fools.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's a nature
nurture. I wouldn't say I'm special, but I definitely feel in that regard. But I do feel like some people just got that thing.
Of course, right.
They got that
and
drive.
I definitely had the drive.
I had it.
You had it for sure. And now Chuck.
Yes.
Oh, first of all, Claude grew up in Stuyvesant Town in New York City, which was super cool because it was like the edgy, raw kind of.
Back then the village was edgy and like it was close. It was right on the edge of the village, and back then that was like punk rock and sex.
Yeah, sex and rock and roll. It was a very different vibe than the hipster vibe that it is now.
That's crazy.
Right. So that was always interesting, just having that New York mix. And then Chuck, you come from
East Boogie, East St. Louis, Illinois.
Oh, my God. Shit. What was that like growing up there?
It was adventurous. I saw a lot of things. You know what I mean? But it didn't really faze me because I was just always in my head. So all the shit that I saw, it didn't even matter. I was so focused. Like Claude, I was really focused on what I was trying to do. So focused on what I was trying to do.
So what about your childhood growing up? Were you surrounded by people who were like pursuing goals, pursuing dreams, super disciplined? Like, where did you get this drive? Where did that come from for you?
No, I didn't really see success. You don't really see success in that particular hood. And then my family, I was like the first person to go to college, so I didn't see it on that side. But
same.
It didn't matter. I saw it on TV. And so my dreams came from what I saw outside of my particular surroundings.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. You saw it on TV?
Yeah.
I guess I did too, but it's crazy.
Everybody saw success on TV.
It's crazy that you don't have it around you, but then still, like, you see something on TV and that still makes you want to.
It resonates.
Yeah. That's dope.
I just never saw myself outside that shit. Like, it was like you. I always thought I can get to it.
And so when did you start? Because I know with Claude, he was always super disciplined. Like, he always knew when to kind of cut out from the group because he had to do his thing. Like, how did that come to you? How young were you when you were like, because for those who are listening, Chuck is like, oh my God, the way he plays the piano is out of this world. You don't have to let us do that because it is out of this world. Like,
Thank
the
you.
First time I ever heard you, I was like, this is what Ray Charles' friends must have felt like watching him.
That's crazy. That's a compliment. That's my favorite.
Yeah, like that's how that's I awesome. Feel. You, the first time I heard you play, I was like, wow, like how? You were so young and
you were playing like that. Where
did that come from, that passion for the piano? And not even just the piano, because you play guitar, bass. I mean, I don't know what there is you don't play.
Right. Around.
You play around.
Okay. I just play shit.
Right.
You just
play.
No, man, that bug hit me at church. You know what I'm saying? I was at New Macedonia Baptist Church in Centerville, Illinois.
You know, the music always good at a Macedonia Baptist Church.
You know, Macedonia.
Okay, where you at?
Listen.
Macedonia Baptist Church,
the music is good and the chicken is good.
And the food. Yeah.
Amen.
So, downstairs. Joyful, Lord.
Yeah.
We don't need support.
She did it. That's my job.
Oh,
your sister, look out for that friend, Al.
Right.
Your teacher says take off your robes.
Ooh.
Come on.
Yeah, but it my passion definitely started listening at
church. Well, some
yeah.
of us.
Mm-hmm. So what were they letting you play the solos? Like, how did that translate into you?
I didn't play
it?
Shit. They didn't let me play nothing. I wasn't playing in at church when I was little.
Oh, I was just watching them.
I was just watching them. I didn't. Matter of fact, I didn't start playing piano till college.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Really?
I'm not playing.
That's wild. Yeah. And how did that come about?
I always fell in love with piano, but it was no pianos around, so I was just listening.
That's such a hood story. I didn't have a piano.
You know, I got my hood stories, but I always fell in love with the instrument, and so when I went to Alabama State, I actually went on the tuba scholarship. And so after...
it's the flyest shit I ever heard in my life.
Okay.
Who you know got a tuba scholarship?
So after that... I dropped out of the marching band because they practiced too fucking much. and that was
I know in the South, that was serious, too.
Yeah, they serious about marching bands at the Black
College. Black
Hop?
Okay, for the record, we went to school in New York, and we didn't have no damn marching band. Like, that's something we watch on Drumline. Shit like that. So
we
didn't
even have bleachers for us to dance on.
This is a whole new experience.
At the Black Colleges, the marching band more important than the football player.
Yes, it is.
Really?
So they practice.
It's like that at school.
They practice, and I wasn't having it.
No, it was just too much.
No, it was just too much for the tuba.
Like, I was playing the bass note.
It wasn't even like I was playing the cool shit. I was playing the bass note. It was just too much practice for that. So that was my opportunity to learn the piano, so I took it.
And how was practicing for that? Were you just doing it
I was super duper focused. I taught myself, and it was like 8-9 hours a day. I was just in the practice room.
But now that you hear him, imagine that he taught himself.
Man.
That don't make no sense.
Yeah, I never took
So you've
lessons.
Never taken lessons?
Mm-mm.
Chuck, what the hell?
Man. I mean, you be playing your fucking ass off.
Might not be taking them, but you give a lesson every time somebody see you playing that motherfucker.
But the crazy part is, like, I'm still so passionate about it. Like, I still feel like that little kid playing in that practice room.
And I know that because we can be in the living room in the middle of a conversation and Chuck will stand up and walk away from you. And you'll be like, wow, was this something I said? And then he'll just start playing piano in the middle. Like, once it hits, it's like, I don't care what we're talking about, I gotta go.
I literally hear music in my head 24/7. And so sometimes I just gotta get it out.
And where did that discipline come from, though? Because the average person is not going to sit for 9 hours and practice anything.
No, no. Firstly, I was an outcast, so I didn't have to fuck with people because people weren't fucking with me. And then,
I love that.
And then,
so
secondly, I'm quiet by nature, so I was just in my own little world in college. I wasn't like partying and all that shit. So
they sure missed it. They missed it.
I had a dream like Martin Luther King, so I was literally
a young Martin in his prime.
To figure it out. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I did.
Wow.
Oh, gosh. Whatever questions y'all have, I don't want to take over.
I do have a question, but I want to keep stay in alignment with the flow. I think it's more suited for the other
you
end
sure?
of the conversation.
Go ahead. No, ask it.
I'm sure, it's just real related to their work, you know.
Come on, man.
Okay,
it.
So
ain't no rules
for
here.
Those that are listening, Claude Kelly and Chuck Harmony are behind some of your favorite songs.
Yes, they are.
And man. When I say behind, I mean they did it. So I know that I'm a huge Fantasia Barrino fan. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that you guys are responsible for handcrafting one of my favorite Fantasia songs.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Bittersweet.
Ooh. Yes.
And in the song, and this is like some bucket list question asking right now. I always wanted to know this. So in the song, Fantasia says, you know, I still have a box full of things you gave me. Mm-hmm. Start to throw it out. What was in the box? I want to know. I want to know.
Holy shit.
Damn it, I've always wanted to know.
So, okay. No lie.
Yes.
I don't goddamn know.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to tell you why, because I think the story
of
why.
It's something in one of my boxes.
No. Real talk, the story of the song, I'll tell you how fast it happened, was They told us she was coming to the studio like in 2 hours, mm-hmm. and we had nothing. And so we made Bittersweet Up in 2 hours before she got to the studio.
Jesus Christ.
So the label had, that's the one song the label didn't hear before. Like normally they'll like approve a song and say, well, this is one we want, we're sending her to cut this song with mm-hmm. you. But at that point, we had already done a one or two, so like, we're just gonna send her and see what happens. She's in New York. So we were scrambling to do a song. Mm-hmm. So he started playing the piano, and we came with the idea, and he went to go build the track and everything. So I was making the song up on the spot, watching the time go down. And asking Chuck, like, yo, is this good? Does this sound cool? Does it make sense? And I remember that part of the verse, actually, when I did it and I stopped and I was like, is this cool? Does it even make sense? Because for me, it's visual. So I see the artist I'm working with, the ideal video in my head, even if the actual video that comes out is not anywhere near as good as the one in my fucking head. Mm. But I see the video, I see how I want them to look. And I knew that it was a heartbreak. By the time I got to that point, I knew what the song was about. So for me, I pictured Lily Fantasia like in her closet, like going through her stuff for whatever, and just finding this box that she forgot was there. And what would that feel like? So for me, it's all visual. So it's not so much what happened; it's what I want to see happening.
You're so cool.
God, I feel like I'm on the set of the song. Like, this is crazy,
right?
Man.
Like you can picture it.
She delivered though, and it just shows how. But she, yeah, but she,
that's her too, because I demo all those songs. Like Chuck and I do a version of the song before people, mm-hmm. before the artist hears it. So there's a version of me singing the song the way I want Fantasia to sing it. Right. And that's as expressive as I can do trying to imitate Fantasia. Mm-hmm. But then she's one of the best at this. Mm-hmm. She'll go in there and it's full theater. Like Fantasia often was crying by the end of a session, like because she was in the moment of the song. Yeah. So that song for me is magic because she took something that happened so fast and made it what we know it to be now. She's a G.
It was so timely. There's a lot going on with her personally at that mm-hmm. time. And just the way that she performed the song. I remember when she did it on Good Morning. I will never forget when she did it on Good Morning America.
I remember that too.
In that blue dress.
Yeah, I remember that
and
too.
And the way she threw her head back when she said, start to throw it out. The way she threw her head to the back, it resonated.
Yeah, but the real in it is that she was going through stuff. So the time mm-hmm. before when we had seen her, she had slid me a note. That was before her husband, who she's with mm-hmm. now. And mm-hmm. she was like, I'm going through this thing. And I mean, I'm not going to all the details. But she was basically like, in so many words, like, what do you do when you like, you should like, it's good, but you know, you gotta leave. And she's like, the word bittersweet just kept coming up. Mm-hmm. Coming up. And all, because for us, like you said, it's timely. We always talk about this. The sessions for us are therapy. Because Fran's been around a lot of sessions. I think Fran's been to more sessions that me and Chuck have done than anybody else. I know. All for the Lewis York sessions, all the artist sessions, she's been there before or after. So it's therapy. So we don't just go in there and say, like, this is this hot trap beat or this hot record. You got to sing it, go. It's usually like we sit down, there's no music planned, or we have a rough idea, and it's like, so what's going on in your life?
It's a wellness retreat.
100%.
Literally.
It is. Because I want the song, I'm looking for the lyrics and melody, and he's looking for the chords that make people cry or dance, but also that are so real that the artist will want to sing it forever.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because if you give someone some bullshit, they'll do it for that one album cycle to make that quick buck, but then when it comes time to do that greatest hits album, even if it was a hit, they're not going to do it.
Yep.
Mm. And that's me as a fan. That's me as a fan. That's me complaining about the fact that when I was a kid, I wanted to go see this Madonna concert once, and I decided not to go because she wasn't doing half the songs that I wanted to see her do because I heard she didn't like them. Mm-hmm. So I was like, if I ever write songs for people, I'm going to do songs that I'm going to try and create experience where they like them.
Yes.
So they was going to do them. So I was like, cool, if Fantasia's coming here, then boom, let's find a common ground. So we're always trying to find that, like, all right, like, where can we get them where they feel like this is, like, pulling at their heart.
And speaking of songs for people, I have a clip.
This is so shady.
And Claude, who wrote the song with Akon, is a well-accomplished writer. He's experienced in producing. He knows harmony. He can sing his butt off himself.
Oh, yeah.
So...
And that's Whitney Houston. I have that
Houston.
Saved in my phone.
Isn't that crazy?
Man.
Because
isn't that
crazy? The first time I heard that, I was like, did she just say my best friend's name? Wow.
Now y'all know how I feel
it's
about
it. It's on
Whitney
my phone,
Houston.
Okay? So, we talked about Fantasia. And we're going to get into Whitney. Like Dustin says, we're not there yet.
That's like Jesus telling you he like your church outfit.
But wait. I wish y'all could see like Dustin that. Right now because he has cherry chapstick in his hand while he's telling him he's doing it. He had to reapply after Whitney Houston spoke.
But yeah. So let's backtrack for a second. Mm. So Chuck is in college starting to master the piano. Claude, you were at Berklee mastering songwriting, composition.
Not even, just singing.
Singing, vocal talent. But both of y'all were going hard in school, really carving out and cultivating this craft. How did it jump from all of those hours of work, to you being like in the studio? And I remember, I know Claude's story, but Chuck, I wasn't in the studio with you in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. But how was the conversion from college to being in studios where suddenly these artists were looking for you? Mm.
So I after college, I moved to Atlanta.
Hey, so, ATL.
I still got my 404 number. Like,
me too.
ATL is in my heart. You know what I'm saying?
See.
So, but I moved to Atlanta to pursue music, and so I was just on the grind. Just every chance I got, I was producing for whoever, trap rock guy, whatever.
How did you get it out to them? Like, what? Because at that time, not that we're old, but the internet wasn't like
it was purely word of mouth. You know what I'm saying? Because it was a lot of upper-class R&B cats like the Dallas Austins and the Jermaine Dupris and all that was doing urban. But in the section under that, it wasn't a lot of good producers that can do the people that needed to get to the Dallas Austins and Jermaine Dupris. So that's what I was. I was that dude. You need an R&B shit, some R&B shit. I was that dude.
You were look on the street,
strategy.
Like.
Look at that strategy.
And plus, I was playing at church, so I really wasn't doing it for money. I was doing it for the love because I was comfortable at church. You know what I'm saying? I was making my little.
Chuck was on his Devontae.
You know what I'm saying? I have my little Jaguar S type, and I was just doing my little church gig. But so I wasn't pressed about production. It was literally still passion. I knew what I wanted to get to, but I wasn't pressed to get to it.
Mm. And how did it go from that to working with Neo in Atlanta and being part of his camp?
He literally, through some crazy way, found one of my beats and wrote to it, just randomly. This guy said the beat was his. And so after Neo wrote to it and the guy found out that the guy didn't do it, he wanted to meet the guy that did it.
Stop playing.
Yeah. Shout out to the scammers.
Shout out to the scammers and the fucking scumbags out there.
And how did he figure out it was you? Did the scammer finally tell him, like, okay.
What happened was when he got ready to mix the record, because he made the song for his artist, Paula Campbell, at the time. Mm-hmm. And so when he got ready to mix it, he needed the files to the beat.
Oh, shit.
And the dude was trying to do some back deals with me to get the files.
Oh, shit.
But I was, like I said, I wasn't pressed. So I was playing at church, so he couldn't just come, like, give me a couple thousand and I was going to do the shit. So I made it right.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And then that's how you and Neo linked up. Mm-hmm. Woo. And then Claude.
Man.
So Claude, the funny thing about Claude is that where I got my start in music was...
Yes, let's tell the truth.
Once Claude came out of college and started working in this small studio in New York City, he was like, "Fran, let me use your voice." And I was his demo singer for like a long time.
All right. Well, I was trying to convince Fran could sing her ass off in high school. She had solos. She was popping. She was a star. And then so
I'm trying not to blush.
No, I'm serious, because what happened was, let me tell y'all the real.
This This ain't about me.
Come on,
she came to high school and was super chill with everyone, super cool. And I think you never put yourself forward as a person that could sing.
Hmm. Right.
So I think it was when we started doing the acapella group. Tones. It was called
Tones. Tones. Oh my God.
Tones. You know you can sing if name your group is Tones.
Tones.
Listen.
She about you up.
Tones. So somehow you end up with a solo, and we were all like, it was literally like Sister Act. We were like, Lauren. You could. And so from that point, she was like super popping in high school. So when she went to college, I went to college, came back, and I'm like, we're both in New York now. I'm like, it's kind of my way of trying to get her to sing.
Yes.
And she was down. So every time I'd go around and I'd need like someone to sing or just try it out or experiment with, I was able to experiment with how to vocal produce because of Fran. Like, I was like, let's double it. Let's do three vocals. Let's take it from the top. Sing it like Mariah Carey. Sing it like Brandy. Do it like this person. Do it like, and she would just do anything.
You know, we got to hear some of that, right?
It's online.
Stop playing.
It is totally online.
It surely is. Blew me, I mean.
But
no,
honestly, it was amazing working with you because you were so good.
At the time, we'd just be creative and come up with stuff.
And Claude had me cutting records for Kelly Clarkson. I remember he would be like, this one's for Whitney. And I'm like, bruh, like, I can't sing that high. You know, like, and he'd be like, you can't, though. And I would think that I couldn't. And somehow this dude would have me sounding, not saying I sounded like Whitney. No one can sound like her. But I was able to hit the notes somehow. Like, he was that incredible at getting you past your limitations. And even us being that young, and you're saying that you were vocal producing through kind of like clay. My voice was like clay for you, like you were able to, but you were so good, like off rip.
I just, for me,
you're always just so good.
I just knew what we talk about this a lot at Weirdo Workshop. We always talk about a shindo, or some word we made up that's taking on a life of its own. But that feeling you get when you know it just is locks. And that's just, every time you hear a song and you get that, them chills in the back of your neck, or you're like that. I was just chasing that feeling. So I honestly didn't know what I was doing at the time. I was just experimenting. And you'd know it too. We'd look at each other. She'd be in the booth and I'd be like,
we got one.
We got that. Like, don't change nothing. Stay right there. Because I was looking for like that feeling. So we would just try it out until we got it. And that's how I learned a lot about how to work with people, because Fran was patient and she was down to try everything. And
we were broke as fuck.
So, yo, we would walk
understand. Like,
the city.
We had no money, and I remember I had gotten fired
from that job. Yeah, I remember.
So I was broke as fuck. Claude was broke as fuck. And so we would just live in this little ass studio that, luckily, shout out to Will Garrett,
man.
He was an engineer that just kind of let us chill in there as two broke asses that he knew were talented. and me and Claude would have to split one salad for the whole day and eat it, like nibbling at it. Imagine having to split a chopped salad. Remember?
Chopped.
We would be like,
save up our money for like a nice chopped salad.
And split it in half, and then had to make it last for the whole day. And then we would be in the studio all fucking day, and then
be on the train,
hop in the turnstile because we didn't have money. And praying that with the cops wouldn't, you know, give us a ticket or get us in trouble. But we legit didn't have the money, and that's how we were getting home and just making it do. And to go from that. Who was the first artist? Like, Chuck, you know, he went and got Neo through this scammer beat. But who was the one that gave you that first break that, you know, you called me up like, yo, it's
a rap. I think the first person where I really felt like life was going to change was Akon. Because I met Akon in Atlanta, too.
Hey, ATL, you know, it's just something down in the water.
Atlanta connects the dots.
I don't remember what
the connection was. It was through like management, all kind of people. But I ended up with Akon, and I felt like my whole thing was, if I get in the room with one of these people,
it's a wrap.
I'm gonna give all my shit. I'm gonna let them know that I'm the next. So I never ever I never made those opportunities pass by, and they didn't remember my name for my songwriting. So he basically, I don't know what I sold him on, but actually I do remember. I'm tripping. This is a crazy story. I was working with Red One.
Red One.
I was working with Red One, this producer from Morocco. He's a genius. And he was working on Lady Gaga, though. We were all unknown.
And Kat the Luna.
We were writing for Kat the Luna.
Yes, I remember being.
And Red One got the call to go work with Akon. And he was like, can I bring my writers? And so he convinced the label to fly me and Gaga to Atlanta.
Crazy.
Yeah, some shit like that.
I remember.
Wow.
Because remember when I met her through you, and she's totally different than she is now. Gaga was this like little Jewish girl with jeans and like platform. Like, remember her platform? And she had like these black bangs.
Yes.
She was more like a 50s doo-wop kind of vibe.
She was just a writer.
Yeah, just a dope writer.
And in that trip, he kind of co-signing Gaga. He's like, yo, I can, he ended up getting out of her deal and helping her get over to where she was, where she still is. And he was like, I think you're dope. I'm going to give you a CD of tracks to write to. That's all I wanted, was just someone to give me a window. And I took that CD, and I just went back to New York and wrote my ass off and Ooh. Sent it back. And he was like, yo, these are dope. And he was like, I'm sending them in. And I think he cut two of them. One ended up on Leona Lewis, and that's how it got me to Whitney Houston.
Wow.
Sheesh.
Crazy.
Look at them dominoes just fall. Boom, 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 boom.
Okay, so now you have Leona Lewis, Whitney, Akon on your team. Chuck, you have Neo. Chuck somehow gets on Rihanna's album and produces.
Now, before that, he has Celine and.
Oh, Celine Dion.
Celine Dion!
Listen.
What?
Talk to us about how you got your place.
That's a real life changer. The day I met Neo, because after that, after he wrote to the thing and he wanted to meet me or whatever. I went in there with a bag full of beats. I played him three tracks. He wrote to all three. He wrote Celine Dion. He wrote to for Mary J. Blige, and he wrote for Janet Jackson. All in the same day.
Rich.
And
so
all in the same day.
Wow. Right, so my life legend, just changed that
legend,
day.
On the toilet. Legend.
I was out there just calling my mama.
And I made it.
Yeah, talk about Celine Dion, Mary J. Blige, and Janet Jackson.
Yeah, in a same day. In a day.
Neo's a G.
Three beats. I mean,
yeah, he changed my life. That's why Neo is always golden with me. He literally changed my life.
Neo's
in a day.
A genius, yeah.
Woo, y'all are a testament to discipline.
But all that led to Rihanna for him. Yeah. All that,
right.
All that,
and
all
please let
receipts.
People know what song it was that you did with Rihanna.
Russian Roulette. I love that song, man.
I can still feel my heart beat.
I can't even believe I'm in the room. I can't even believe I know y'all. This is crazy. All right,
I'm waiting on them to pass me one of them purple flowers from Black Panther. Y'all niggas got the juice.
Shit.
Oh my God. Okay.
Don't let me do it. I'm like, the Black Panther has been stripped away.
Okay.
The competition can begin.
Oh, so now you guys got your placements. You are in the industry.
Yeah.
How did that feel? Do you remember the first night that you got like your big, big placement, dream placement, and you're home in your bed? What the fuck does that feel like to know that you made it?
Well, it was all a blur after that day it just became so much work, you know what I'm saying? Because you start to feel like this not gonna last. You know what I'm saying? You don't, because you don't really feel worthy of stuff that happened to you like that. So you feel like every day I'm gonna lose this, or Neo not gonna think I'm good no more, so I'm not gonna get this opportunity.
Damn.
Or
imposter syndrome almost.
Yeah, and the other part they don't tell you is the money don't come in fast. So you still at the church house. I'm still on the organ and shit playing. I played for two and a half years after that day.
Wow.
Every Sunday at church, you know what I'm saying? Because I had to until that money started rolling in. But after that, I didn't feel anything. I was just so numb with work. And when I first got my check, that moment I remember, because I got super duper depressed.
Whoa.
Plot twist. Yeah, I'll never forget. My accountant called me, and he was all happy. He was like, yo, we did it. You know what I'm saying? You got that.
They always say we.
Yeah. And they ain't did a fucking thing. But we did what? Yeah. So he was like, we did it. And I remember I was on my way to the studio, and I was in Atlanta, and I sat on my bed, and I thought to myself, like, you work all this time to get this shit. What now? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, What do you do? Like, you don't go buy shit, because I'm not that kind of person. So it's nothing that I really wanted to buy. Mm. It's nobody that I really, really wanted to tell, because it's kind of like
scary.
It's kind of scary. And then when you don't come from money, you don't even know what to do with it. Really. Mm. You're like, you don't want to brag about it.
You don't want to brag about it.
I'm still scared I'm going to get robbed. Like,
I was going to ask you if I could have $20, you know. We got the same wallet.
Now we got the same wallet.
Look, yeah. That Atlanta connection.
You can always get $20.
But you know, what's up, my brother? You was ATL.
ATL, baby.
But I remember this depression because I was mourning the time that I it took for me to get it. And I don't, wow. I didn't really feel like it was worth the time.
Wow. Because
when you got them blinders on, like even after, because I got my first placement in 2007. So you're talking about all of this time to 2009, I had these blinders on from the time you're a kid. To 2009, you got these blinders on to reach this goal, and when you reach it, it don't feel like you wanted it to feel, and so you start mourning your time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was depressed most of my career because I didn't understand it.
Me neither.
Wow, and this is actually, whew, this is why I really wanted to have this convo with y'all because I have witnessed you guys be depressed.
Yeah.
And it was a mind fuck for me because here I am sitting in my two best friends' massive, like, sky-rise apartments, mm-hmm. condos. They're millionaires. Everywhere we go, people are, like, tripping. And I don't mean people on the street because most people on the street might not recognize you guys because you guys are more behind the scenes. But I'm talking about when we'd go to events, like, the executives, artists that know who you guys are, tripping over themselves, loving, praising mm-hmm. You guys at the Grammys, mm-hmm. which was mm-hmm. so emotional, and seeing you guys be nominated and in the studio with legends and icons, and you both were still super sad. Yeah. And that used to fuck with my head because I was like, well, then what is happiness if it's not accomplishing your dreams?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I might as well just go sit in the bathroom.
Just like, you made it. What's going on?
Yeah, like, I'm like, what more do you need than to be a multimillionaire who reached your goal? Like, if that's not it, then what the fuck is it?
Because a lie that you tell yourself is that the goal is the end result is the prize, and the journey is the prize. Mm. Mm. And I didn't learn that the first time around. So the same thing happened to me. First of all this stuff was happening to both of us in different cities, and I didn't know. I had no one in the business outside. I mean, we talked all the time, Fran, but
yeah, outside, but I wasn't in it
inside
like
the business. There was no one that I was really communicating all that insecurity and fear and depression mm-hmm. to, because you sound ungrateful. If you kick in the door and your first things are Whitney and Britney and stuff like that, then how dare you be complaining?
Right.
So you don't really say anything to anyone. You're just like, well, I guess it's just...
how dare you be sad?
And how dare you be sad? And how dare you even say, like, this is not enough or I'm not happy when everyone is fighting for that position and trying to take you out because they think where you're at is happy. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it was me realizing that the whole time that I was getting there was the fun I was having. Even when it was hard as shit mm-hmm. and it was... I had no, like them splitting them half salads was a blast.
Oh,
that's so much. Sometimes it's a lot better than you getting the whole salad and you don't want to talk to.
Word to that.
Yeah,
that's, you know, real though.
That's straight up.
A lot of it was that. So when I nailed my first couple placements, I had a panic attack because I was just like, all right, well, if you thought it was gonna take your whole life to get to these people and then you get there at the beginning, now what the hell do you do? Mm-hmm. Where do you go from here?
And how do you stay there?
And how do you stay there? And what makes life interesting if you've been chasing Michael and Whitney all this time? And then, I mean, it seems like it was fast. I had to do a lot of work to get there. But if you accomplish those things at the beginning, then what's worth it after that? Are you even good? Is anything you do after that good enough? Should you even be doing music at that point?
So many questions.
It took me a long time to undo that. And then I realized that I could do whatever the fuck I wanted. So literally that was my mentality. I was like, all right, cool. So now that this is what like a black writer from New York has to do to get it, and I did that now I can have fun.
Yeah.
And so, and this is still before I met Chuck. This is all before we actually met. These are his accomplishments that got us in the door together. The labels put us together because of these things we did, Rihanna and Britney and Whitney and all that stuff. So I was like, cool. Now I'm just gonna keep you guessing. And my thrill has always been since then, like, as soon as you think you have me pegged, you don't have me pegged. So if you look at my catalog, it's like, it's not, and his too, is the same thing. It's like
country music.
Yeah, as soon as I did Brandy, then literally they would, and like, oh, he's a black R&B. He writes R&B, duh. I'd come right back around and do Miley Cyrus, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't make any sense.
And then
I'd
be on Party in the USA,
the only Miley Cyrus song I've ever liked. real shit. And so that, like, just how you know, yeah. how, you know, you know.
And then you swerved on them and did Grenade.
So, I mean, it's always been Bruno Mars. It's been like,
do y'all I hope y'all niggas understand.
There really isn't a whole lot that I can say because the people that y'all have worked with, like like I can't even believe I'm in this room for real. You talking about Gaga? Like I remember the start and being excited again about pop and being like, damn, there ain't been shit like this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even Britney Spears, them records, like
Christina Aguilera.
Come on now. Come on now.
And so, but that's why, and can you imagine, like, I was on the outside looking in. These are my two best friends, okay? And I'm seeing this, and they're working with everyone that I'm, like, obsessed with, and I'm freaking out like a little kid, like, okay, who's next? What's the song? You know, and then being blessed, because a lot of times Claude would let me come and demo the records for these artists, so the artists were hearing my voice as well. So it was a blessing. So to see that you guys, like I was saying, were still scared and nervous, I understood the nervous part because now you made it. Now you have to stay there. There's always new writers. There's always people at your fucking heels just ready to get you the fuck out the room, you know? I understood that part. But but your moms were finally taken care of with money. I know Claude's mom's like always away on a trip.
That part is awesome.
It's a blessing.
Because I love my mom. I'm a bona fide certified mama's boy. Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, anytime I can make my mom smile is a good day.
And so she's so proud.
And she's proud and she's happy and she's living her life completely golden.
Yes, Lord.
which makes me happy. But that doesn't take away from your personal goals or like what makes you happy, what makes you get up and go to the studio or write or go to any job really. And that part you got to figure out for yourself, even if you're taking care of your mom or taking care of your fam.
Right. And there's a quote that I actually always think of by Jim Carrey where he said, I've often said that I wish everyone could realize all their dreams and wealth and fame so that they could see it's not where you're going to find your sense of peace and completion. I can tell you from experience, the effect you have on others is the most valuable currency there is. Because everything you gain in life will rot and fall apart. And all that will be left of you is what was in your heart. Isn't that sweet?
That's crazy.
I love
tattoo. You know, right.
All love it.
Okay.
You know, I love Jim Carrey.
You know, the whole script, you got to go on there.
On a scroll.
But that really, I noticed with you guys, with other friends of ours who are fully realized or have made it, is that there's always this sense of my dreams were just one small part that I thought were going to be so much bigger than they were.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And then it almost kicked in this sense of spirituality into you guys after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, and it's always, I noticed that, and I'm blessed because I was able to see that as an outsider. Like, it's that spiritual aspect that most people don't tap into early enough because they think that the dreams and the money and the fame and the attention are the destination.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's actually the journey. Mm-hmm. How many celebs have you heard say, I would give all of this back to be who I used to be, you know, like they
and I used to think that was so corny.
I used to
that
think it was
so
dumb.
Unrealistic.
And
I'm
you
like,
think
y'all
it's
not
a
gonna
lie.
Give back millions to make your life better.
And you think it's a lie, but I get it.
I totally understand that. I'm totally with it.
And can you explain to us as outsiders what is that? What is that yearning for how things used to be?
Money is just this funny thing because to lie and say that it don't bring joy is that's retarded. You know what I mean? Like there is some pleasure to having things or to being able to get the desires of your heart, but there still is some real emptiness to it because once you have it, it's like if you experience buying like your dream car, and I don't know how many people have, but once you get it, like as soon as you drive it off the lot, it's already lost some value to it because you've obtained it, and then you moving on to the next thing, or you moving on to the next material goal in your head, because it's the material goal is not a destination for you.
Plus, a lot of people don't realize, I mean, and it's easy to say that once you have a lot of money, but people don't realize that money is relative.
That's the other thing.
So like, you could have $100 and you have to budget it. And it's a struggle. That don't change if you have a million. because the bills get that much bigger.
Right. Yeah. Your life expands.
So if the $100 that you got a budget is the same as $1 million, the same as $1 billion, because when you have $1 million and you have a bigger staff and you got a bigger house and you got more expensive cars to take care of and you got way more, just way more things to worry about. So it doesn't happen that like you just make all this money, especially for people of color, because we don't come from generational wealth in this country like that.
True.
Right.
So it's not like someone's leaving you just some family jewels.
Right.
That just made me think
you
of
don't
that.
Have the guidance.
That just made me think of that goddamn jewel that lady threw over that damn ship in Titanic. I just got pissed off.
That was so wasteful.
So I'm like, you could have passed that down to a needy child.
Right.
Like me.
But
because we don't have that.
Right.
You don't have the luxury of just like chilling, because there's, you know, if I don't do anything, there's like money will be there for me. So you're always thinking about how to budget it. Like, I've never been a millionaire that felt like, I never made $1 million and felt like now I could chill. Like, I knew that it could disappear because I knew that $100 could disappear.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, that was another thing that I noticed with you guys. I'm like, yo, first of all, I was like, yo, my friend's a millionaire.
It was like, I'm about to run out.
No, it was just so cool because I'd never seen that in my life. And then they were only a year older than me, you know? So it was like, holy shit, this is real. Like, you see celebs say it all the time in their acceptance speeches, like, if I could do it, you could do it. But there's this weird sense of, like, they're not human.
Right.
Because you don't know them, and there's, like, a disconnect. But to see your friends that you know, you went from splitting a salad and jumping turnstiles with, and now he's a multimillionaire living, you know, down on in Soho by the, you know, like, it's just like, oh my God, you know, and even things like, even things like something simple as the fact that Claude has not taken the train in so many years.
We started to take the train today, but then he Ubered.
No, but even that used to blow my mind. Like, Claude would always be like, let's meet somewhere. And then he'd come out in this nice ass car. I was like, yo, my friend is popping. Here I was sweaty from the 6 train and shit.
Now, did you Uber X or did you Uber helicopter?
I'm always Uber X.
Oops.
And even your clothing, like, they started wearing like really fly stuff and getting haircuts. Cool. You know what I mean?
But here's the thing about that is that, see, I hope that we never get off that impression. I mean, I get it. I mean, because we definitely could afford
it. But you deserved it.
No, it took a long time to realize I deserved it.
Mm. Right.
But for me, everything about this is where I feel like Chuck and I have always been misread, is that there are a lot of people out there here that do it because they want to be seen and they want to go to parties and they want to find designer clothes and stuff. I've never really cared. Like, I've always really been about the music and the feeling.
And the furniture.
I do like furniture. I do like furniture. But for me, it's always like my style is not so much about what the brands, because a lot of the brands are not high name brands. It's just,
you should have your own collection.
Thank you, my friend. One day I want to get my own damn collection.
Can I have pieces from your collection?
Yes.
Done. Mm-hmm. Co-signed.
But for me, it's always been an expression of my mood. So it's always been like, I literally dress in the morning. Sometimes I'm wearing all black. And it's not even because I'm in a bad mood. It just feels like an all black damn day.
Hear ye, hear ye. The two dopest queens to ever do what they do are coming to HBO. So gather around the TV and prepare thyself for the comedy coronation of a lifetime. Watch as Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson, a.k.a. Two Dope Queens, bring their comedy podcast to HBO in a series of 4 comedy specials. Directed by Tig Notaro, each special features your fearless queens dishing on topics like Coco Khaleesi's, dating white bays, sex, New York living, which borough has the best pizza, and so much more. They'll also be showcasing some of their favorite stand-up comedians and chatting with their favorite peeps like Jon Stewart, Sarah Jessica Parker, Titus Burgess, and Uzo Aduba. Two Dope Queens, weekly on HBO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what I thought was cool was watching the evolution of you guys when the money came in. You guys didn't change.
Oh, that's good.
But no, your clothes got a little fly, you know what I mean? I was like, those are expensive pants.
Brand New Balance.
Yeah. Or even suddenly, you know, we'd go to dinner and the bill, because they started eating in really high-end places, and I'd see the bill and I'd be like, motherfucker. fuck? That's like $500.
That was Claude.
That was not-
No, but all I'm saying is it was beautiful to witness you guys stepping into the your life becoming larger, you know, and that was super cool. Now, here's my question. They always say when you start getting wealth and fame and attention that people change, right?
Yes.
Do you feel you changed or was it the people around you that changed or was it both?
You asking us both?
Yeah, I'm looking
I
at
I think
Chuck
it was
first.
Both.
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Because I just got guarded. And I got guarded because I didn't, like I said, I didn't understand wealth. And so you're not only looking for people to rob you just physically, you're also looking for people to rob you spiritually. So I just got guarded. So that was my change and got super isolated. Even with my friends, you know what I'm saying? I was just... I'm still kind of an isolated guy, but when that first happened, I got really isolated. But people did change.
Were people asking you for money, family
coming
out the
woodworks? Yeah, they ask you for money, and then when you give it to them, it don't matter because once they ask you again, if you say no, then the whole relationship is screwed. And I never understand that. I never understood that because I'm like, yo, I just gave you money the last time.
Right.
Nobody gave me no money.
Right.
They be looking at you and your money, be like, it's my money and I want it now. And it's like, it's not your.
Nah.
I've already done this. That's
well, they say that you can say yes a million times, but the one time you say no is the one that I'll remember.
But it's not like that one no is like they get mad for a day and then they call you the next day. That one no is the end.
You don't give a damn about me.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck. Because they kind of feel like you just supposed to. Like, some people feel like their life's supposed to change because yours changed.
Right.
Right.
And it ain't always financially responsible, you know, to do that. Because money is relative. You know what I'm saying? That's what happened to MC Hammer. He had a lot of money, but if you're taking care of a lot of people, you're going to be in the hole.
It's still not responsible.
And really fast. And when you don't come for money, you don't know when that time is coming. You know what I'm saying? So you kind of extra careful, but then you kind of sympathetic to people's needs, and everybody got the nicest sob story about what they need.
Lord, everything. I can only imagine.
As a nice person, it just eats you up inside.
Yeah.
What about you?
For me, I feel like it's probably a combination of both for the same thing as he said. But people show you who they are.
Yeah.
When money's involved. So it's not so much about them asking for money. I learn a lot about people when people change when they find out you got money.
I mean
the people that you thought were gonna wish you well, they don't wish you well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like the ones who should be happy that you got a song on the radio and they start kind of side eyeing you and you're like, but I thought we were. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's always what, and it happens still. That doesn't stop happening. It's an eye opener for me, and also just the fact that people don't understand that the ask comes after the relationship, not before it. So there's this thing where now that you have zeros in your bank, so I could just come and ask you for something.
Right.
I'm like, but I don't know you. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's this feeling like. Like, it'd be like if you walk up to Oprah and you're like, yo, you're Oprah, so, like, give me a show. Like, give me $1 million. But it would require, anyone giving you something would require them knowing you and wanting to do that. And people feel like they can skip those steps with you because those zeros mean that you can skip the relationship part.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I actually wanted to do a whole show about that. No, I really did because I'm nowhere near a millionaire. Like, nowhere near. But people see that I'm doing better.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's this thing now that I'm noticing where people get mad at me if I don't align with them because they ask me to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's this like this sense of obligation that people try to project on me, like, well, you put on, so you have to do. And you know, I always talk about ecosystems, which in a weird way is starting to bite me in the ass because people are like, well, you're the ecosystem, and I need this.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it doesn't really work that way. Like, ecosystem to me is an organic thing. It's my peers. It's my friends. It's my family. It's people I know who've been trying to do something and for whatever reason didn't have the resources or the opportunity. And I have a link or I have a person or it could be me that to me is what an ecosystem. It doesn't mean that you can like DM me or email me, and because you have this plan, I'm supposed to be like, come on, and then put my money down, you know?
All right. Mm-hmm.
And, but then you look like a bitch or a bad person or Hollywood or whatever when you don't do that for everyone who expects it of you. So I can only imagine on your level, like, what that must have been like.
Right.
DMs popping.
Yeah, but and also, but we, listen, we're around people that still have done a lot more than we have, and they're going through the same problem.
Yeah.
Right.
So, it like, it doesn't change. What's that, like, Easter, what's that Issa Rae thing which, that everyone went viral where she was saying, how about how you should network?
Yeah, you should network on your level.
Yeah, yeah. Like, right. It makes a whole lot more sense to talk to the people that you have a relationship with. You've been rocking with them, so you're like, yo, let's do this mm-hmm. together.
Right.
But people don't see that. Someone who really wants to be where y'all are at is going to walk up to you because, just because they see Asante and you just assume you got a lot of money. They're like, put me on. And you say no, and they're like, asshole.
Right.
Like, do you experience a lot of that too outside of money, like in the creative as well?
Yeah.
Like,
that's even worse.
Are you kidding me? The number one question is just like,
no, because you got like, you meet these people and everybody want to be at a certain point, a lot of people want to be musicians and famous.
At a certain point, that's all day long.
Okay.
And artists. And so you have these people that you have different kind of relationships with, but because they have that kind of relationship, They feel like you're obligated to give them what they ask for. Like they feel like you're obligated to give them a bittersweet just because you gave it to Fantasia.
Mm.
But I'm like, the talent level still got to be at a certain level so we can create some
magic.
That's
why it's disrespectful to me. Is that anyone who's doing what you're doing, you're passionate about it. Every single thing. Some people come to you like, I'm like, yo, you just wipe out the whole fact that there was like a lot of work and
That is literally the point that I was getting ready to have you expound on, because I feel like a lot of times people look for, like when you mentioned, they ask or they request that you put them on as if, you know, there was no. I like how Oprah always, because, you know,
I love Oprah.
You know, she always said that it's all about being prepared, like preparation, opportunity, the intersection of those two things.
Amen.
So it's not just about, oh, well, you got it, put me on. Mm-hmm. That's such a general umbrella request. Like, that lets me know right there that you're not even ready for any type of opportunity. It has to make sense. And when you got your quote-unquote big break, both of you all, as talented artists, there was work done to prepare you for that moment when the door opened. You had the shoe on to kick your motherfucking foot through all the way up through there. You know what I mean? With content that legitimized you being in that position. And so, I don't know, people, it's always been, you know, baffling to me that people would request like, oh, well, you know, put me on or whatever. What are you even asking for?
Right.
You know what I mean? What do you have to offer
that
makes this opportunity worthy of you even being in that position?
Exactly.
So I know y'all dealing with that shit too.
Every day.
Well, they say people want to start at your finish line.
Right. Like, man, what?
That's some deep ass shit.
They do.
That's mind blowing. So I can only imagine.
Jennifer Hudson once told me that, she said, when you get to the top, you have to take the stairs to the top.
Oh, I remember that quote.
And then everyone else wants to ride the elevator with you afterwards. It's like, but I had to climb the stairs all the way up here.
Okay.
You can't meet me on floor 2.
They're like, well, send the elevator down then. Like, no, climb the stairs. Like, and that always stay with me because there's this appearance. And by the way, it's not just their fault, especially in the entertainment business. It is the fantasy of the entertainment business that it looks easy.
Yeah.
And that it came from nowhere and that you can just get discovered overnight.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the lie they tell you, that I think is that bubble is just beginning to pop now because of social media, and you see that all the fugazi most of the time.
Right.
But for most of the entertainment history, it's been this thing where, like, it's not, they try to pretend it's not a village.
Mm-hmm.
They try to pretend that it came really fast and easy. You don't have to do nothing. And so it's easy for people to walk up to you and be like, yo, give me. When it takes a lot of years of practice, a lot of years of no's and rejection and mistakes and trying to get around and just really just trying to struggle to make it happen.
Mm.
And that's why you're defensive about it, not because you. I want to help everybody. Like I'm sometimes too gullible because I feel people's problems and their pain, and I want to. I see the solution. I want to fix them, but you have to be protective of yourself, so you have something to give.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. So how did you guys overcome? So, okay, now, you know, you got your placements, you got your millions, you know, and you did it. You did it. How did you overcome the sadness and also the financial fear? Because becoming a millionaire when you're a kid, you know, single parent, and both of y'all are single parent, you know, we don't have moms that have ever dealt with millions of dollars right. that could tell us. You know, that's scary because we look to our moms for a lot of guidance.
Yeah.
Suddenly, your life is bigger than she's ever seen. She it's beyond her scope of understanding. So you don't even have that person. Mm-hmm. And your mom is like probably the only person you trust at this
right.
point
right.
that you would even tell anything to.
Right.
But she can't even help you with this. So my first question is, how did you overcome the fear of it all and the depression? And then my second question is, and how did you figure out financially how to navigate being a millionaire? Like, did somebody tell you to get a financial advisor? Did you fuck up and spend hell of it and get scared? Like, oh, wait, I might need to chill. Let me get some help. Which, you know, let's start with the how you overcame the fear part.
Well, the financial fear, I never overcome that. Like,
I've
just come to the conclusion that I'm a musician and I'm in the entertainment business, so you have ups and downs, and so you just allow yourself that wiggle room. Like, you know, it's not going to always be millions in the bank,
right.
and hopefully you won't get to deplete yourself, but I just think at any level there is some financial tension, and so I just learned how to embrace it. I know how to edit myself when it comes to spending and stuff. So I just faith in that. That's how I deal
with
it.
So you're more open to like the ebb and flow
yeah.
of having money.
Yeah.
What about you? How'd you handle the fear of suddenly being a millionaire?
I'm still scared.
The first in your family.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have panic attacks about if I'm overspending or underspending. That's because it's just in my DNA. Like
yeah.
when you grow up poor or you grow up like learning how to budget and
how to shake it,
you never lose that. And I'm actually happy that I'm that way now because it's better to have it when you have money.
Because
then you know how to not blow it. So I'm flashily frugal.
You know what I'm saying? Frugal.
Like, I do like nice stuff. I do like to eat out sometimes. I do have my vices, but I'm also super, super frugal. Like, sometimes I'm eating crab cakes, and sometimes I'm having oatmeal for every meal of the day. Real talk, still today. Like, people think it's like I'm that person. Like, I'll put myself in the corner and be like, all right, nigga. Like, you doing a whole lot now, so it's time to have crackers for dinner. And I'm that's just how I am, and I thrive off of it. It actually helps my workflow.
Wow.
It makes me feel like I have something to overcome.
Yeah.
I have something to fight for. Like, you can't just be sitting there eating caviar and talking about the struggle. Like,
not the struggle.
Yeah. Because shit ain't hard. So for me, it's about putting myself, even if I have the money in the bank, I still section it off in a way where I'm not sitting there knowing it's there. Like, I've always put myself on a budget.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, nice. So yeah. That ties into my next question. How did you get financial help immediately, or did you have to make a couple mistakes? Like, because I know now you have like your accountant and your whole team, but how'd that come about?
I didn't think to have an accountant, but I was still very good with my money from the beginning. Sometimes they tell me that they were like, you know, you can
have a little fun.
Yeah, you can go ahead and like actually pay for that. Because I'm always thinking about a rainy day, or if I might need it for something that really is important, like health or
yes,
or like necessary travel to get to someone if I have to get to them. I'm always worried about stuff like that. Mm. And my fear, I hate that it comes out of fear, but my fear is always that someone needs me and I can't get to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone needs help with their money for health and I can't help because I blew it on a chain. That would right. feel awful, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff keeps me in line. But early on, people like Akon and other producers like that suggested people that they saw that I was smart and I was trying to be in this for the long haul.
Oh, so they would just bring it up? Like, how would that come? Were they like, yo, just so you
I got,
know.
I mean, I got a lot of gems. I got like get a financial advisor from Akon. I got like
ecosystem
sign a prenup. I got all that. I got all that advice. No, because I mean, these are people that have been through stuff. And so you listen when people remain wealthy or even when they lose wealth and come back and they have lessons to tell you about how not to make the same mistakes. Yeah. I try to make. I don't want to be a fuck up just because I didn't listen.
Yeah.
So I try to listen to people that have been through that stuff and know.
So the element of humility is important then, right? Once you attain certain levels of success financially, so that you can even receive that information from somebody.
True.
That's
true.
Gotta be humble all the time, because I just said to Chuck yesterday, because we're in a phase right now where we're recording new music. And when that happens, we put ourselves...
Right? Is that right?
We put ourselves what we call underwater, mm-hmm. which means that, like, you go in a study phase. So it's like, you know you're about to learn. Your mind's about to be blown. I'm reading a lot more. I mean, I read a lot, but I'm purposely reading. I cut my cable off. So, like, I'm just literally just in this zone. And what I've learned is that you never know shit. You think you know, but you don't know, which requires you to be humble.
Yeah.
So I thought I knew everything in 2007. And I thought I knew everything in 2009 and so on and so forth. And every single time I think I have this thing figured out, life blows my mind. Mm-hmm. And life, I'm talking about in good ways and bad ways. Yes. Like, you realize that, like, yo, like, money don't last forever. Friends don't last forever.
Teams don't last forever.
They
don't. Teams do not last forever. Promises don't last forever. And so as much as I can try to be
forever
prepared.
Don't last.
Forever don't plug. You know what I'm saying? Plug the record. Jasmine's holding.
Side note, Chuck,
Forever Don't Last, Jasmine Sullivan, produced by Chuck Harmon.
Like, Harmony.
What? See what I'm saying to you?
Yeah, man.
We don't have to have a section where y'all just brag about what you've read.
Yeah,
so,
I really would love, for real.
No, we'll do that. We have to, because the world needs
ask
to
the
know.
but I mean, that actually, if I'm being honest, that's actually, you're asking like how we got over it, but I don't really think we got over it.
Or how you're working through it, rather.
Mm-hmm. Even constructively, until me and Chuck had an actual conversation about it. Mm. So we were all friends, but not the kind of friends where you're not really keeping it real about, like, your real fears or, like, your money problems or like, what the future holds and how you feel about it. That's kind of friendship me and Chuck had before. Where, like, we did Fantasia and everything after that that we did together. Tori Kelly all up to right that point. And hadn't really had a real convo. And then it was until right before all this, the new wave of us, we were at a workshop with Louis York. What caused that was a conversation. He was like, yo, I'm depressed. I'm getting ready to quit. And I was like, I'm depressed. I'm getting ready to quit.
Damn.
And that's after all the stuff that we taught, all the artists and all the cool stuff.
All the accomplishments.
And then the conversations were about money and, like, here's how we think that we're not getting paid enough or why is it worth this or how come this. Just all the conversations about what made us unhappy and what got us so far from our passion. And we decided to link up literally arm in arm, like, we're gonna save each other from this bullshit. Mm-hmm. And so the music that we do now is actually a reflection of us coming out of the first 7, 8, 9 years of success, but personal confusion and misery and what the hell am I doing and is this even worth it? So the purpose is literally Louis York.
Yeah.
Ooh. Before we move on to that, Chuck, I just want to know, how did you come into, who put you on with Gems on how to handle this money?
Well, I got my financial advice too soon. I didn't even have money, but... But because I signed to the same management company as Neo, they just gave me his whole little thing, the lawyer, the accountant, the whole. It's kind of dope, kind of.
Yeah,
not,
very.
But so I had it early, and you know what I'm saying? And the financial advice, they still work for you, so it's not that much advice they give. You know what I'm saying?
I fucking love Chuck Harmon.
So. But that's how I got through it.
A lot of it's common sense, right? Like, like to me, people don't give enough credit to common sense. Everyone's looking for some magic book. Everyone's looking for Deepak Chopra to tell them how to do shit. And it's like, yo, but if you could just use your brain, you know what I'm saying? If you got $32 and you might not want to charge that $34 Gucci belt this week, you know, it's common sense. Like, and a lot of times I feel like Chuck and I click. Because we're like, yo, this is, that don't make no sense. let's just not do it. Let's not cause more problems for ourselves.
You know, it's funny that you brought up that Gucci belt because, you know,
that's funny.
Well, I'm just,
speaking of Gucci,
as a black man, you know how awkward, well, maybe, you don't know, it might have been a while, how awkward it can be when you're in a place and you're spending money and people are kind of looking at you like, oh, I don't think this person has any money.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah. How has that looked for you? Have you been in places sometimes and been like, I'm about to spend a shitload of money and these people are looking at me like I'm not about to do that and this is crazy. Or, like, have you ever been in a situation where you've been treated a certain way? Or
in a store?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I mean, that's being black in America. Yeah.
Right. Like, I remember working retail in Atlanta and I remember people, producers and stuff coming in jogging suits looking like they haven't done anything in like a week. And people being like, you should go help that one. And me being like, putting my hands together, being like, I'm about to get cool. this sale. They're about sale. To like spend money.
Yeah.
But I mean, I get followed through stores now, and it took a long time for me to just not give a shit because then you kind of feel like you want to show them that they're wrong.
And then that's when you spend too much
that's
money.
They win anyway.
They win anyway.
Like, nah, bitch.
Because you're giving them your business.
But yo, listen. But the lesson was like what I learned. That's why I'm grateful for like the first part of my career was I saw a lot of different kinds of people with a lot of different kinds of wealth.
Yeah. Mm.
So I worked a lot with Max Martin. Mm. Who's the god of pop
Ooh,
writing?
Wee.
Yeah,
and you wouldn't recognize Max on the street in terms of the way he presents himself, and that's not because he presents himself shabbily. It's just like white t-shirt, blue jeans, Converse sneakers, maybe Adidas, Prius, maybe
a Prius.
You're talking about like
hundreds of millions.
Every song, he's changed the game for everyone so many times. Mm. So you start to realize, oh, there's different kinds of wealth, and how you show it depends on how long you want to be in this.
Because to speak to that point, when you don't see that, like you grew up in New York, so you saw different kinds of wealth. Mm. I didn't. The only wealth I saw was the hood wealth, like the dudes with the cars and the rims and shit. So the biggest lesson I learned in the music business was when I came to see you at the studio. You remember that story?
Mm-hmm.
I came to see him at the studio, and I had my little urban placements, and I had just saw
my little urban placements. Super disrespectful, yo.
Because that's part of the story. I had my little urban placements, so I bought my little urban Mercedes Benz. And so I'm going to see my friend at the studio, and I pull up in my new Benz and shit. And Dr. Luke is in the car next to me listening to mixes, and he's in his Toyota Prius.
Damn.
Listen, like Katy Perry.
You're talking about the embarrassment of life. Because it's not like I met a famous songwriter or famous artist. I literally met neck and neck, producer to producer. And it's levels to the shit. You know what I'm saying? Dr. Luke is one of my favorites. So I know it's levels. That's I look upward to that. And so to see the disparity in what we was driving. And he was listening to his little probably future number one record that was gonna make him more millions while he drove his little Prius, and I'm sitting in there in my air conditioned Mercedes.
Okay. He's saying this is what the rest of America's got. Yeah. The guy to hear what it sound like
It changed my perspective. You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't see that growing up. And then when I got in the music business, I was still kinda in the urban lane. So you just get whips, and that's what you get when you get some money. And so just even crossing over there to see to meet Claude and meet Dr. Luke through that, I saw a whole nother side of having money where you don't have to wear it. Because I knew he had money, but he didn't have it on. Mm. I had all my money on.
I was about to say, I follow all the jewelers on Instagram. I'm thinking about whenever I give me some money, I'm putting all of it on my face.
I'm trying to wear it all at one fucking
time.
And that was that little short period of my life when I first got signed. Neo gave me this big ass compound chain.
Ooh.
And so it was a short period of my, a super short period. Because I don't like jewelry. I don't like none of that shit. But I just felt like that's what you do when you get on. You get a Mercedes and you get a chain.
Was it fun, Chuck?
Man, I had fun. I can't lie. I had some fun with that. You know what I'm saying? A chain and a Mercedes in LA get you some things.
Yeah,
it gets you.
Is that right?
It gets you. Some events in the evening.
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 Tell us about the most expensive car you've probably ever purchased.
Oh, my God.
Anything more expensive than a Benz? I just need to know the life of a millionaire. These might be things that y'all might have crossed things off my bucket list I don't have to worry about. So, who has the jet?
That Mercedes was my biggest teacher because I got so disgusted with that car that I gave it to my mom because she deserved it. But
so she loving it.
No, but it represented something that I didn't want to become. Mm-hmm. And so after I drive a pickup truck now, you know, I drive my little Ford.
I drive a Porsche.
You sure do drive a Porsche.
However,
that I enjoy,
and as his best friend,
I ride
in the Porsche.
In the passenger side of your best friend's ride. You see.
But let me tell you, I have fun. Yeah.
But it's all good. No, but I got a Porsche.
Claude really, when we were in L.A., I was staying in his crib and he was elsewhere. I think he was in Nashville. He gave me the keys. Like, if you need to drive the Porsche to go get this anything in the supermarket. I was like, who are you?
I love the car, but they're still just things to me. Yeah. Like, they don't really mean that. Like, cars, I'm not obsessed with cars. Chuck had to convince me to get the Porsche. Yeah. True story. I was looking for a Jeep Wrangler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I got in that. And I got in that shit. And I was driving.
But he
LA.
Wasn't looking for the good Jeep. He was looking at the
white boy. Yeah. The white boy 90210 Brandon Walsh. Yeah. Like,
the one that don't even
white
ride.
White hair
good.
Flowing in the wind, but you ain't got no white hair.
That's all right. You feel it.
You feel? You know what I'm saying? Like the whole 90210. I was trying to relive that crap. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm gonna get me like a Wrangler, and I'm gonna be out there like, come on, Brandon, let's go to the beach. You know what I'm saying? I got in that for a test drive, and it was the most uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. And so I was like, I've always wanted a Porsche. He's like, yo, you should treat yourself to something, because I'm not the kind of person. I usually treat myself to vacations, mainly because I like to travel. So it's a luxury car, but it's the car I wanted, not the car that I don't really go there.
You barely drive it, though.
I don't really go nowhere. So
ain't nothing wrong with you having no damn Porsche anyway.
Right. What I'm saying? But that's my mentality. You see what I'm saying? Like, my mentality is, like, even still, I'm like, yeah, like, I mean, where could I be using this otherwise? But I just enjoy the car for my personal, you know, to go to Kroger's and shit.
That's right. In a Porsche.
For goodness
sake. You see what I'm saying? Go to Publix in a Porsche.
Hey. Go to Beauty Supply. In a Porsche. You know what I'm saying?
Drop by Sally's.
Go to yoga.
go to yoga.
In a Porsche.
In a Porsche.
Get you a bowl for both. In a Porsche.
Hey. Damn it.
This week's episode is also brought to you by Z-Quiet. Z-Quiet is a revolutionary anti-snoring product created out of one family's need for peace and quiet. Dan and Trina Webster were desperate for a solution for Dan's snoring. And their personal desperation led to a simple solution to a problem shared by millions of Americans. Made in the USA, using soft BPA-free material, which is very important. That means it's toxic-free plastic. Z-Quiet is a comfortable, easy-to-use mouthpiece that has been helping snorers and their bed partners for 10 years. Just pop it in when you go to bed, and it works immediately. You can talk and even drink while wearing Z-Quiet. That's so cool. You can talk and drink.
Ain't that crazy?
Wow.
I love a nightcap.
Because it works on the simple principle of moving the lower jaw slightly forward to open the airway and prevent vibrations that create snoring noise. Try it with confidence thanks to their 30-night better sleep guarantee. Right now, Z-Quiet is offering an exclusive $15 discount just for our listeners. Just go to buyzquiet.com and enter promo code ZONE. That's BUYZQUIET.com and enter promo code ZONE to get your $15 off discount. Kick snoring out of bed and sleep quiet with Z-Quiet. So do you think a part of what made you guys sad at some point was that what you guys thought success was wasn't what you actually wanted?
Yeah, for sure.
Is that what it comes down to?
It just, like,
nothing, were chasing someone else's idea of success.
Nothing in the music business was like what I thought it was going to be. Right. I thought it was going to be
Please
like...
Please expound.
First of all, I thought they cared more about talent than they actually did. So,
woo, say that.
I thought.
Say that again.
I thought they cared more about talent than they actually did. Mm. So I thought when you do make it, when you get to the Celines and you do get to the Marys and the Janet, that it gets easier. You get more respect. Mm. But you don't get it.
You don't get that.
You don't get it. Like you literally, like when the NFL players say that NFL sometimes is slavery. That's what all of it is.
Yeah.
It's a form of slavery where they underpay you for a service and you get no respect. Especially when you're behind the scenes. Artists don't really get that much respect, but especially when you're behind the scenes, you don't get no respect. They don't even want to credit you.
Which is crazy because you're literally handcrafting their success.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if anybody would get the respect, you would think that the artist who delivers it and literally the masters who created it would get that respect.
Yeah.
If not for you, it damn sure wouldn't be none of them. That's why you cuss their ass out.
Cuss their ass out.
That's right. Right there.
Cuss their ass out. Straight up.
I'm going out the hard way. I mean, I think we've both been... Part of what gets us where we are is that we work well with people.
Mm-hmm.
But what I struggle with because of that is... I thought that being as professional and good, the best at times, most of the time, if I'm gonna keep it all the way real.
Keep it real.
was all you needed to do to get the respect, the money, the space, the platform. And that's not the case. Like, you gotta kick ass sometimes. And I did a lot of kissing ass to get there. Then I did a lot of maintaining and making sure everyone else was cool. And then you realize that, like,
It sucks.
And no one gives a shit about you personally or even about your art or how much time you put into it. So you have to start being forceful. It's not about being an asshole. It's about being defensive of your time.
There you go, right there. Mm-hmm.
And what I learned the most was that time, it's a lot about money, but time is the only real currency. And so I get angry now. Like, I can spend money and I can be like, all right, cool. Like, we tried some stuff and we blew some money, but we were trying. Because I believe that'll lead me somewhere, but wasting my time is an easy way for you to never hear from me ever again.
Mm.
Easiest way. Because it's the only thing you can't get back.
Yep. Yeah.
You can't get it back. So the money, the car, all that stuff is cool. Even me writing songs, I know I can write songs well, so I can write another song. But the time I wasted, if you don't deliver like you said you're gonna deliver or do what you said, or you don't respect what I put into it. I can't. That's the part that's hard for me to forgive because you can't give it back to me.
Yeah.
So the apology doesn't. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't mean anything at that point.
As a songwriter and as a producer, you know, the best of the best, to be clear. But in those positions, how do you guys feel about Quincy Jones' recent comments about the state of, like, songwriting in the music industry today? How most people are just relying upon, you know, a catchy hook or something, you know, resonating with people in that way, as opposed to the complete structure and the technical knowledge of how to structure a song. How do you guys feel about those comments?
There was no lie.
Mm-hmm. Not one lie.
I knew you were going to say that.
And what he said about creativity. And I was happy he said it because it needed to be said, but because there's so much fucking noise online right now, everyone tries to take you one down, but it's very hard to take down Quincy Jones because he's the architect.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for someone who you couldn't make fun of or turn into an online joke. Say like, yo, y'all suck.
Shit.
I wanted someone to say it.
Yeah.
Because most of us can't say it there's always some loophole or some joke that can be made. But someone who's like, nah, I work with the best, even the ones you don't know I worked with.
Mm.
To say that. That the business sucks, because the business sucks.
Mm.
The business of making music, making money through music sucks. And the way that people handle the art itself and the artists and the creatives that make it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had to say that, so I was relieved. I'm actually more pissed that he apologized.
Yeah.
I was pissed about that. Because
you should earn, at 85, you earn the right to say what the hell you want to say about it.
Yeah. You know, grandmothers, grandfathers been talking. They was the first shit talkers.
Right.
You know?
That's how you learn how to talk shit.
That's
listen
goals.
To your grandmother
when you can just
and your grandfather.
Say what the hell you
when I'm 85,
yeah.
Yo, listen. All y'all in here, when we all 85, when I start talking my shit, don't come on the table and tell me like to go apologize.
You
know,
remember
like,
take your side like you should probably apologize.
I'm a turn my wheelchair in your direction. Be like, that's right.
That's what I'm saying. That's friendship right there.
Shit.
I thought it was genius. We've in my opinion, it's actually changed how we've been creating recently. Because it reminded me that greatness, there's levels. Because when you start to talk about him, you start to dig through them records, you realize like, oh, like he's done shit that none of us have done.
You pull your lip right back up to the other one real fast.
And when I say I'm the best, we read it and I talked to him. I was like, I felt like I got a good spanking.
Yep.
Because it felt like someone who knows a lot was like, you guys are all fucking up this generation.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Unless you've done close to what he's done, you should feel like you got a lot of work to do. A lot of work. That's how I felt. So I was like, well, let me go sing these songs a little better. Let me go, you know what I'm saying, make sure my shit is airtight because grandpa music literally told
grandpa
us.
Grandpa
for real.
And in the most respectful way.
Right,
like,
right.
The grandfather of music was just like, yo, like, I don't like this.
And everybody listened up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you guys think that there's a way to be in the mix, like working with these artists, you know, making all this money, being in the limelight, and be happy? Is it possible to do both? Like, really possible to do both?
Damn, friend.
That's a good
now
thing.
You see why she always is like, you ready to get in this week's episode?
I'm not interested in this week's episode.
Because I noticed so much unhappiness.
Right.
And discomfort at the top. There has to be a correlation.
Well,
what is it?
Well, if it is a such thing as being happy and doing all those things, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, me neither.
Like I haven't met a happy rich person yet.
Right.
Damn, that's deep.
Nope. I haven't. Like all the people that I call friends or associates, like they all come to the studio. That's why it's a session. They come with their problems.
Right.
It's therapy.
They come with their and they be having some real ass problems. Why they getting blasted online like us, you know what I'm saying? Why they getting blasted online and shit? They got these real ass problems that they dealing with that cause a depression. Sometimes they want to kill themselves, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes they don't feel like they good enough. So I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it exists.
And that's why I asked, because being around you guys and all the artists that I've had the pleasure of getting to know in your studio sessions, none of them ever seem happy.
Nope.
And I'm talking about massive artists, and they're always nervous. They're always, you can tell, anxious about how they're being perceived, how even vets that sound incredible seem insecure.
Yeah.
And worried, and you know, and I'm always like, how is that? Like, you're huge, you're massive, you're an icon, you're a legend, you're still scared, you still feel like you're an imposter, you still feel like you don't deserve this, even though you've been in the game for 20 years. But what I have noticed is that the two of you have stepped back from the industry.
Mm-hmm.
You've stepped back from the limelight, you stepped back from trying to work with icons, you step back from trying to be known for being, quote unquote, the best and the top writer. And, you know, and I notice you're happier.
Much happier.
And I also noticed that you guys have stepped into spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my next question. Did you find God through your sadness?
I found her.
Did you hit rock bottom and find God?
Spirituality was the purpose for a weirdo workshop in Lewis, York. So I was just looking for a way to love music again and love myself
again. Because it's all the same thing.
It's all the same thing. Love every single morning, like just a chance to do it again, and I wasn't doing that. So the only way I've ever known how to find happiness has been through music. So I was like, well, there's no better way or better place to start than trying to use your gift. I never understood, even though I came close to it, as soon as Chuck kind of saved me from jumping ship, I was like, that was stupid. What the hell was I talking about? Like, you should go back to the source of what makes you happy. So in the process of doing that, it created a spiritual awakening. where like you've now seen what the top, you've seen what the riches on the top bring in, the unhappiness and the depression and the fear and the anxiety. So everything about the music that I try to write or that I even try to listen to at this point needs to make me feel something that's a lesson. So it's not so much about, oh, I go to church because I don't go to church, and I don't want to. But it's not about that. It's not.
You were listening to T.D. Jakes with me.
No, I learn. It's not about because it's not about church. It's about learning from people and things. So there's I'm a sponge. It's lessons everywhere, every single day, and I'm trying to apply them to my art. So and the art for me is literally like my way of recording history. So I can listen to the songs I've done since that point, since we did Lewis York and we were at a workshop, and they remind me of my growth. They remind me to avoid fear or to avoid regret or to avoid self-doubt, all that kind of stuff. So I feel like I have become a more whole spiritual being. Mm. If I'm not relying on someone on a Sunday to tell me some magic speech that's going to make me feel like I'm worthy. I'm not looking. I don't feel like if I put too much money in a collection plate, I'm going to feel like I'm going to heaven. I feel like I'm experiencing heaven every day if I'm doing what I love and I'm learning from it, even if I make mistakes while I'm doing what I love.
Ebobo. Because you just said a word.
Yes, and it's,
come on.
That took a long time to get to. I mean, we rode and created our way through all the smoke to get to that point. There was no, like, overnight I woke up and I was like, Lord, I'm the Dalai Lama. Like, that didn't happen. I still feel like I'm making a lot of mistakes right now and learning from what I know and don't know. But to understand that God isn't some white man sitting on a cloud, that it's the voice inside your head, and that the happiness is when you're doing your very best with the people you love, the thing you love. It changes everything, because then you spend less time being depressed, because depression comes from worrying about how come I was hoping that this person would save me and they didn't save me, or this idea would save me and it didn't save me,
or this dream would save me
and it didn't save me.
Right.
When you remove all that stuff, you can really allow yourself to first of all find spirituality and also find your purpose. Weed helps as well.
Okay.
Right.
Do not tell people.
That's a plug.
See, millionaires co-signed weed.
I just want to say that.
Done deal.
It truly ushered in the spirituality that I was looking for.
Chuck. What about you? The question initially was, do you think you could be in the limelight and be happy? You said no. Mm-hmm. So you're happier now, though. So what shifted for you to bring you to this point?
Well, I had a lot of work to do on myself. You know what I'm saying? That's where my spiritual growth from the work that I had to do on myself. Just understanding, even from jump, that I'm worthy of everything that happens to me, good, bad, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like if I take responsibility for the bad that happens to me, which I often do, and I beat myself up and I own it 100%, then it's also right for me to take the good, take credit for the good and enjoy it and be able to know that I'm worthy of it. And so that was the self-work that I was doing. And I the spiritual aspect of it is that I started recording a CD that was crazy. I think I let you hear this.
Yes.
And it was not some CD for sale. It was not because I wanted to be some gospel artist or some inspirational artist. I literally went back to the source, like you said, of your happiness and music was always that source to me. So how I dealt with my depression is through music. And so I just created this collection of songs, a collection of my thoughts.
That was so amazing.
And it wasn't just the actual journey of creating it. It was me listening back. I never experienced that. Like, even as I matriculated through the music business, I've definitely heard my work on people, but I never heard my thoughts on people because I was more of the producer and I didn't sing the song. So I would only hear my work, which is what production is. So after I did the body of work and I got over the fear of listening to it and got over all the crap you got to get out of your head of why this shit sucks or why did I do this shit. And I listened back to my thoughts. It healed me. my own internal thoughts that healed me of the depression that I was in with the music business, and that was my spiritual journey.
Wow.
I mean, I think the bottom line that I'm learning through watching you guys and all of our other peers who are also having their, you know, breakthroughs, is that you have to stay in alignment with what you want to do.
Yes. What you want to do.
And I think what's hard about being in the limelight is that it's not about you. It's about how you can stay up there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times it's by any means necessary.
Yes. Mm.
And I think that is what I've learned being on the outside watching you guys, is that is the disconnect. Mm. It's hard to be the top producer and expect people to want to create what you want.
Right.
Mm. Now you are a formula chaser.
Yeah.
You have to give hit. Yeah. A hit isn't necessarily what you feel.
Yeah.
A hit is what is wanted of you.
Yeah.
And I think if what I'm learning, and this is me through my personal success and growing, is that I want to figure out how to stay in alignment. And I don't know if you can stay in alignment and be yourself and true to what is coming into you that needs to be expressed through you. Can you do that and get to the top? I don't know. I've never seen anyone do it.
Well, let me just add, because we've had the pleasure of watching y'all grow.
Oh, thank
Amen.
You.
Amen.
Oh, here we go.
No, because it's important, because I learned from my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things that you think you know that you don't know. But you cannot find your happiness or your growth if you're comfortable. And I learned that from you, because you guys keep on reinventing the challenge for yourself.
Mm.
Like, as soon as you think, like, oh, okay, they're cool, like, they could just do this and coast. It's like, no, like, you just, like, literally there's albums coming out and tours and wellness tours and celebrations and things and different variations of stuff. And I realize now that, like, to your point about like, everyone putting you in these boxes. Once you create success, it's about, life is about overcoming challenges and rediscovering how brilliant you always were.
Because
everyone's trying to make you forget it.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone's trying to tell you that, forget that you're good. Like, just
or
do this.
Or to tell you how to be brilliant.
Or tell you how to be brilliant.
Which I think is the hard part of making it to the top.
So the breaking out of boxes is literally to prove to yourself that you're as able as you thought you were at the beginning.
Right.
And I've watched you do it several times with just getting over certain fears to become this person, which leads to this person, which leads to this notch on your belt. And you guys are all doing that. And for us, you get to a point and you're winning in the music business, and then everything gets busy but comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the calls are coming in and they're cool, and they're cool to the rest of the world, but they're not really challenging you. And like you said, you become this hit factory, so they're calling you for this thing that you did. And it doesn't allow you to
evolve. There's no room for
and there's
growth.
And there's no spirituality. There's no true, pure spirituality if you're not always evolving and growing. Because there's always something. If you're alive, there's something for you to learn. So if you're just sitting there comfortable, then that's just as good as being dead, in my opinion.
Well.
Do you guys have any more questions for them?
I have all the gems I need. I did ask a question earlier about who has the private jet.
We don't have a private jet.
No. When is the Weirdo Workshop getting a private jet?
a long ways away.
Can I come with you when you buy it? So I can just say I was in the room.
Yes.
Because that would be really crazy to say I was in the room when someone purchased a private jet.
Oh my God.
You can be
that
there.
That would be awesome.
All right. And also, you have on hoodies for Weirdo Workshop that we will be receiving sometime soon.
We actually, okay, so truth be told, the hoodies became a popular thing by accident. But we just ordered y'all some.
Hey. Okay, great. Sweet. Just wanted to make sure I got
y'all
that
will
up.
Be receiving.
So you shall receive.
In the map.
This is recorded.
It's recorded and it's real.
Lots of people listen and they will bother you if we tell them to.
I know.
I love the exclusive.
So what I'm saying is, you heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first.
So what's something for aspiring creatives? They don't even have to be in the music industry. It can be for acting. Mm-hmm. It can be for absolutely anything. Any dream that somebody is trying to fulfill right now, being that you guys have done that, being that you guys are constantly evolving, recreating yourself, what do you tell that kid that is trying to get to where you are? What's something you could have told Chuck back in college when he started that piano? What's something you could have told Claude that you think he would need to hear right now?
I'd have told myself that I was cool and it's okay to be myself. You know what I'm saying?
Like, amen.
It took me so long to come to that conclusion that, yo, like, you're cool. Like, you're okay being yourself. Matter of fact, that's what people want from you. That's what people actually accept. And you spend your whole life thinking that's what they won't accept. Mm-hmm. So you do try to be everybody else. You know what I'm saying? So I'd have definitely told my little badass that you cool, man. Like, how you do this shit. Like, all of this shit, all this quirkiness about yourself, it's all good. You know, so what?
Oh.
Yeah. And you know how hard that is for me to say that.
I know.
Fran. Because she watched the process. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You talking about goals.
Man.
Go ahead.
Mine would be, I would tell little pissy tail Claude. this is hard. I tell myself a lot of stuff. Enjoy every second.
Mm. Amen.
I spent way too much time worried.
Yeah.
About losing it and impressing people. Was I good enough? And the only regret I have the first time I achieved success was that I didn't mark it and enjoy it and remember it. Mm. And now, like I said, that I understand the journey is the real win. I'm constantly just, like, even right now, I'm looking around there. I'm just memorizing, like, because I want to take in the moment as it happens. Because yeah. I'll just walk through, I'll just go through stuff. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. All right, cool. Did that? I just did that. Cool. That means that leads to this. Cool. And you have to enjoy it because tomorrow isn't promised, but you are supposed to be learning in the second, mm-hmm. not in retrospect,
right.
not in the future. Like, as it's happening, you're supposed to be learning. And to learn, you have to be open-minded and enjoy both the pain of it and the love of it. And I love now. I love both sides. But I would have told myself to enjoy it more, a lot more.
I love it, Dustin and Sante. Anything you guys want to add?
You know, I just I just really want to thank you guys because I really feel like our podcast has been largely successful because when people turn it on, they hear some really good music. Mm. And I also feel like, you know, not to toot our own horn, but, you know, beep to the beep. I feel like we're the only podcast that has, you know, music, you know, on that level. And so I just want to thank you for the separation.
Of course.
Oh, because, you know, I really appreciate standing alone.
Stand alone.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I appreciate that, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was fun to do.
As the resident music man of the podcast.
Of course.
Yes, sir.
Actually, you know, I should set you up, Claude, because you got me yelled at in here for your icebreaker. I should, but I'm not going to do that to you.
You got me yelled at, Claude.
I'm going to wait until it was early in the episode the next time you're here to do that to you.
All right, cool. I got answers.
I would like to just say thank you as a music fan. You probably made some hits and were dealing with some shit at the time that I could not even understand, but I definitely twerked my ass off and fell in love with life and pop and R&B and various
awesome,
different
man.
Things because of y'all's music and what
thank
y'all
you,
been
man.
Doing.
Yeah,
so
yeah, thank you.
I just think that it's super awesome. And with that said, I would just like for y'all to name off some more of y'all's music.
We're going to do this. This is the part that we always cringe doing, so let's just do it, all right?
Please.
This is a safe
you
space.
All right, it.
So between myself and Chuck, okay. We've done this guy, Pretty Girl Rock, Circus for Britney Spears, Grenade, Russian Roulette, Bittersweet.
I blame you.
Party in the USA.
All the shit y'all loved before y'all started hating Chrisette.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Like, the whole Epiphany album is Chuck. The whole Epiphany album is Chuck. Mm-hmm. And I wrote half of it, and him and Neo did the other half. But it's fucking brilliant.
The music has never been
it's
a problem.
Brilliant.
Let's be clear.
Let's just establish the
even
music will get you right.
Even when she was on that stage, they was having a good time bopping to that music.
That's
okay?
What I'm saying to you.
It's never been the music. So talk your shit. Y'all
Whitney,
did that shit.
Whitney's last album, Michael, Celine, Janet.
Hold on, because you can't just skirt by them names you
okay.
just said. Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston did three on her last album.
Who else? You
I
said
did Michael.
Michael.
I did
Michael
Hold My
who?
Hand. Michael Jackson. Not
okay,
Blackson.
So Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Not Blackson.
Okay.
Not Blackson, but Jackson. Celine Dion, Janet Jackson. Mary J.
Mary Jane Blige.
I mean, everyone in between. I mean, literally, Jasmine Sullivan. I'm forgetting a lot of people. Jesse J. Tori Kelly.
Y'all have done some amazing stuff with Jesse J.
Domino, Price Tag, all that stuff.
I feel like we're forgetting
Miley. Jesse fucking J.
Miley.
Kiki yeah. Palmer.
you did that one on Cherish First album, too.
Don't try to play me. He said you did that one on Cherish First album. Yeah, yeah.
No, okay, wait a minute. Hold on. What about Cherish?
Now y'all know we love Cherish.
Okay.
A moment in time. Or one of my personal favorites that you did recently, Raise the Bar on Tamar Braxton's Calling All Lovers.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
That's no, I don't know that one. That's
yeah,
crazy.
You know. Well, you know.
I mean, and the thing is, yeah. I mean, listen, like, people think that because we became Lewis York and we started Weirdo Workshop, that we stopped working. We didn't stop working. We just started working smarter.
Yes. Mm.
So, like, we're doing NDRE right now.
Yes.
And, I mean, so we're still doing a lot of... We're just working with people that we enjoy but also have different cool things to say and also putting out our own stuff. You know, Shindellas.
Shindellas. Shout out to the Shindellas.
Shindellas. Casey, Stacy, and Tam.
Casey, Stacy, and Tam.
And they are beautiful and amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. Three black women who moved to Nashville with us to start their own band, but they're part of Weirdo Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
You guys saw them perform live in New York.
Yes, we did. Yes. It was amazing.
We're coming back. We're
flawless.
But
the Shindellas,
it's the future.
Again, we can't just glaze over.
Right.
Because
right.
Watching the Shindellas, actually watching all of you perform, but we'll get more to that later. But the Shindellas, watching them perform is such an experience. Mm. The costumes that they wear, the way they choreograph, even the way they move and look at each other as they're singing, all of that is part of the experience of watching them. So it's not just, you know, they good, they dope. No, these girls are really like, they know who they are as performers.
Yes. Yeah. That means
so
a whole
it makes
lot.
The experience, yeah. Chuck Harmony.
Yes.
Watching Chuck Harmony play the piano live is like nothing you've ever seen before.
Yes.
And now that I know that you spend so much time literally, physically studying people play the piano.
You see it.
Mm-hmm. That the way that you, I love watching live musicians perform because it's like they communicate through like playing the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that, even like the way that Chuck leans down into the piano, he's communicating.
Yes. Yeah.
He plays so expressively.
Yep. Yeah.
So hearing the way that it was the origin of your style, it makes so much sense. And that's why going to see you guys perform live is something that everybody that has an opportunity to do should do. Because you see the music tell these stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see the connection that you both have as artists, which is amazing because you work behind the scenes for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody can, you know, coexist in those worlds. So seeing you guys be expressive as artists is just next level. So
man, I appreciate that.
People need
and
to
the
do
music
that.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
I have put y'all's music on so many playlists and will repeat.
Dude.
Because there have been songs I've listened to by themselves on repeat for like 30 minutes at a time, being like, okay,
come on,
I got
man.
It.
Oh, man.
Don't
like,
play,
for real.
Don't play.
Slow motion. Raging Bull, slow motion.
Listen,
like
listen,
I'll be sitting
things
there
I
in trance.
Fran was the only person that was around. Like, she's the only, we locked out from everybody. And Fran was the only person like, I'm coming.
You're locking me out.
It'd be me and Chuck and our engineer Pizza
and me
and Fran in there ordering dirty Chinese and just literally just getting it all out. So she was there from the inception, but y'all ain't heard shit yet.
I cannot wait.
I can't wait.
If what we heard is, I can't wait. Like,
right.
What?
Yeah. It gets good.
Because
a
now,
lot of surprises.
Now we know that we're a band. You know what I'm saying? Like
yeah.
Even the beginning of Lewis York, we were still trying to figure out what we were. You know what I'm saying? We didn't know. And so now that we know, we can lean into what makes us good live, and we can lean into what makes us talking heads, and we can lean into all of that
spirituality,
stuff.
All
and
that
what makes you most importantly.
Exactly. Most importantly.
And so the new music is just a combustion of all that information and freedom.
I can't wait to blow up.
Well, you have something to say?
No, I just have one last thing.
Uh-huh.
Chuck, you worked with India in Atlanta, right?
Uh-huh.
I can't remember the songs.
Wait, but India Sean?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
and
my bookie.
I used to steal her demos off her computer, so I'm sorry. You know, don't sue me. I just listen to them. I ain't share them or nothing. I don't remember the song. But you did the shit out of it.
Thank you.
And
that's
he said, that's real,
so,
right?
You did like, the shit out of that song. Because that was back in like 2007 or 8 or yeah, some yeah. shit. And it was a demo. So yeah. I ain't been able to like hear it on the radio since. But yeah. it was the shit. I and love I can't even believe Sean, I'm sitting yeah.
here with you. Oh, my God.
Galaxies, man.
She makes me want to cry. Seen her she's so journey. Good.
Yeah. I love Galaxies. You put me on the Galaxies.
I did play
we
Galaxies.
We were in London. Yeah. You're like, yo, listen to this. And I've been listening to it ever. It's been on my playlist. I listen to it all the time.
Well, maybe you ain't heard nothing yet, but that's for Franca to decide. She's India. The only one that's heard the project.
I love that people let me into these lockout okay. sessions.
It used to be me. I'm trying to get back in.
We're going to cut you out from now on.
Well, I just, you know, I want to say that you guys have been so crucial in my life, so vital. You guys gave me permission to think big. You showed me how big life can be. And I'm not even talking about the fame or the money, but I'm talking about watching your level of discipline, watching your level of discipline create this person out of you, the talent, the perseverance. I've seen the ups and downs. I've seen you guys get crushed. I've seen you guys be devastated. I've seen the depression. I've seen the failures, but I've also seen the highs, I've seen the Grammy noms, I'm usually the one crying, you guys don't cry, but whenever you guys have a new achievement, the beauty of it, seeing your moms cry, seeing your peers cry, how you guys get praised, how you guys get love, the respect, the talent, song after song after song. Just when I think I've heard the best song you guys have ever made, somehow you have another one. Okay. I mean, you guys are just like an infinite, infinite power. And I'm so thankful to have been able to witness it and to know that not only can dreams be achieved, but they can continue to morph. And you guys have continued to stay aligned. And that has been the most powerful thing, even though I have seen you guys sad. But now I see you guys happy. And that is so important to me, and I'm just thankful that you guys have always been there to just show me the other side. The other side of life, if you just put your fucking head to it. Yes. Put your head down, just focus, do the work.
Yeah.
You can do it. You know what I mean? We came from nothing, nothing. Immigrant parents, you know, immigrant parents that they, you know the story, they came with $7 and one pair of shoes. And look at you now, you know, and it's such a blessing to have been able to witness that. And I'm so thankful to have been on the other side. And also how you guys have integrated me into it. You know, you guys always included me in everything, which is always so cool. Anytime they're going to the Grammys or a show, it was like, Fran, come. You know, Fran, what are you doing? Come to L.A. Come to this. And always have me flying around the world. Just, just happy to be there and to witness greatness in my own friends, and it really pushed me to do the same. I didn't have guidance. I didn't have role models. I never saw $1 million, but I knew my friends did, and so I knew it was real. And so thank you guys for giving me permission to do the same, and I'm proud of you guys, and I'm excited. I'm not gonna cry.
Yeah, please don't start this right now. I just hope that everyone in this room, to whoever hears this, understands that everyone in this room is proof that you can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah. Totally.
You could do it. Like, that's all I want to. That's all, like, forget the songs. Forget what. Like, it's just be proof that you could do whatever you want to do. When you hear Dustin, when you hear Fran, when you hear Asante, when you hear Chuck, when you hear me, when you see us, or you hear about us, whether it's positive or negative, if they're talking shit, know that I can do whatever I want to do. If they're talking positive, you can do whatever you want to do. But I think our lives are examples of that. That's what makes me proud to know you all. And to be even in this space is that it's all miracles. It's all miracles.
I appreciate that or whatever, but nigga, you just got through saying you wrote for 2 Jackson, Whitney B. Houston,
Celine Dion,
everybody loves Celine.
Okay, we heard what Whitney had to say about your ass.
Thank you, but like
he said, 2 Jackson,
we paying attention. Okay. We are pupils. Okay, right now I just want you to understand that.
But thank you. I just have to say thank you, and most importantly, I think the message for those of you listening, outside of like do the work and know that you can make it, is that what's going to take you the farthest is just being yourself. Like, I know you hear it all the time, and it even sounds cliche at this point. Be yourself, be yourself. But honestly, that energy signature that only you can express is the key to how far you will go and is the key to what you have for the world. It's the key.
Major key.
Major key. Major key. No one plays the piano like Chuck Harmony.
Nobody.
A lot of people play the piano well, but nobody plays it like Chuck Harmony. A lot of people sing really well, but no one sings like Claude Kelly. Nobody. You know what I mean? Mm. Whitney Houston could have picked anybody to work with. Who was she speaking about in that interview? Claude Kelly. Why? Because there is no other Claude Kelly.
Man.
And he stepped into his greatness so that someone like Whitney Houston could see it. She could see it. A fully realized human being. And may we all be as blessed. Please. May we all be as blessed to step into it, because no one is lucky to step into it. Everyone can. You just have to do it.
Amen.
Wow,
amen.
Friend.
And that's it. Thank you guys for coming.
Every time I'm in the zone.
Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, we love you guys, and we will see you guys next week.
Hear ye, hear ye. The two dopest queens to ever queen are coming to HBO. So gather around the TV and prepare thyself for the comedy coronation of a lifetime. Watch as Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson, a.k.a. Two Dope Queens, bring their hit comedy podcast to HBO in a series of four comedy specials. Filmed in front of a live audience at the King's Theater in Brooklyn and directed by Tig Notaro, you won't want to miss this, or you'll literally regret it for the rest of your life. Two Dope Queens, weekly on HBO at 11:30 p.m.